I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Do you not understand that they are that way because you're Joe Flacco?
And you just like to discredit things that people deserve credit for.
That you can't possibly be expected to defend that.
Talk about the game, Sam.
So,
who cares about what people think about us?
Yeah, I like football season, all the things that go with it.
Welcome in to the PFF NFL podcast. Almost a false start there, Sam. I don't know what came through there. But hey, welcome in. PFF NFL podcast. Steve Palazzolo, Sam Monson here, going through our NFL season preview series. The Easts are up. AFC and NFC, we did that on Monday. Now it's Thursday, and we're going through the Norths.
Yep. New divisions, multiple. New podcast. Let's go.
AFC North, NFC North, we're going to go through. We give every team as much love as possible, previewing all of the biggest question marks, all of that fun stuff. We had someone suggest, you know, sometimes it's a long NFL offseason, and even the biggest NFL fans sometimes forget all the moves that were made. He suggested a show where we just kind of like ran through all of them. I'm not saying we're just straight list them like free agent moves, Arizona Cardinals, you know, but maybe there's one where we just fly team by team and say additions, subtractions, draft picks. What do you think?
Should Sounds
we do
like it would take a lot of time.
But we don't even, there's like no analysis. We bring no analysis to the table.
Yeah, well, it sounds like it would either take a lot of time or be very bad podcasting.
It might be.
I don't know that there's a world where...
We bring minimal analysis to the table.
Yeah.
Biggest additions, biggest subtractions, and a minute on what it means. Maybe we'll do that.
I don't love the idea.
The other thing, you know,
that's fine.
The other thing we need to do is have the bet show. This thing has really taken off where people are challenging us with bets, things that they want to, you know, put on the line during the season. We're going to have a few at the end of the show, so we'll have a few. But we're going to, like, we have enough that we're going to dedicate an entire show to accepting or declining some of the bet offers that our listeners have made.
Yeah, at the end of the show, we will run through rapid fire, I think 8 bets that I highlighted that we'll just decline or accept at the end of this show. So hang around right till the end and you'll hear some of those ones. Send them in, NFLpodcast@pff.com. These are things where, you know, we've been saying, broadly speaking, the same kind of thing all through the offseason, you know, other than when things have changed. And if you think we're way off on something, let us know.
Call us out.
Yeah, call us out. Let's bet on it. And if you're right, you know, we'll send you some PFF stuff.
And then finally, do you want to see Sam throw a baseball? I do. I want to see him throw a baseball. I want to see him try to throw 60 miles an hour.
Yes.
And you have the opportunity to do so because we're doing another charity drive. I'll let Sam talk about that. But that's your pin tweet at PFF_Sam. Once we hit our goal, Sam will try to throw the baseball as fast as he can and try to hit over 60 miles an hour.
Right. Remember, I have guaranteed 60 plus miles an hour.
You have.
Guaranteed. The first number will be a 6. Now, it might be 6-0, but it will be a 6. Which, remember, is 14 miles an hour slower than you were pitching. That's quite a lot. I'm giving you quite a lot of room. You know?
Yeah.
And it's 14 miles an hour faster than you.
For more perspective.
Slower than you, and about 14 miles an hour faster than the dude just, like, lofting the
pitch. I was throwing 20 miles an hour slower than my prime.
Yeah, oh no, you were bad. I'm just saying that.
I'm just telling you the regression that I've sustained.
Yeah.
Heading into my 40s.
No, yours was miserable, and yet I'm still giving you 14 miles an hour. That's what I'm saying. That's why I should be confident.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Anyway, my pinned tweet, at PFF_Sam. There's a GoFundMe link there. We'll put it in the description as well. I don't know if inflation or what is, the gas prices are hitting people, but right now the uptake has been very slow. We have never had a charity drive idea that has generated as many emails and comments and suggestions as this one, and yet here's the time for the money, and we've raised $70 so far. So look, every donation, big or small, is appreciated. If you want to throw in a dollar, if every one of our listeners throws in a dollar, we'll get there in immediately. If we have, you know, particularly rich donor, fire in a bigger donation than that. Nobody bought the X chair, the fancy egg thing that costs like $7,000. You know, our high-rolling listeners, They didn't come through for us.
Yeah, I didn't see anybody that did that. Yeah.
But if you want to come through for us and help us raise money for Needs, Inc., which is provide service dogs for people. Service dogs cost upwards of $17,000.
That's crazy.
And then $40,000 to train the thing. So $17,000 just gets you the dog. The dog that needs to be trained. So if you need a service dog and you're not rich, you are in trouble. These people help bridge that gap. So it's a great cause. Let's raise money. They're really highly ranked on whatever that charity navigator rating thing is to make sure that the money's actually going to the right place, not, you know, office parties and whatever else charities blow their money on. So it's a great cause. You can donate with a clear conscience and know your money's going to the right place. Let's help us raise some money so that we can do stupid things on video.
All right, so let's do that. Go check out Sam's pinned tweet at PFF_Sam. We'll throw it into the link of the YouTube as well.
Yeah, I mean, we've said that twice, so I'm sure Tyler will actually do it.
Yeah, we'll make sure he'll have it. All right, thanks to everybody already. How fast can Steve throw now? Well, go back and see the old video. Somebody's asking, YouTube.
Yeah, 74. You know, you maxed, you gassed it up to 75.
71, 74, 75, yeah.
Yeah.
Not great.
No, not great at all.
I blame the pocket radar.
You blame, well.
Though based off your reaction to the pitches, it really wasn't coming in that fast at all.
No.
So, anyway. Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. Like I said, we already hit eight teams. We're a quarter of the way through the league. We're on to the AFC North. We're going to start with the Baltimore Ravens. Baltimore Ravens for this season. Didn't make the playoffs last year. Lamar Jackson gets hurt down the stretch. Already a lot of discussion around Lamar Jackson and his development. Has the league caught up to him? You know, the usual offseason discussion. The reality is Lamar has regressed since his MVP season, right? Mm-hmm. 2019, he was outstanding. There was a point last year where it seemed like the offense, this really was the best pass offense that Baltimore had had. The run game had taken a step back. But down the stretch, I'll get into it after you respond here, but down the stretch, Lamar was not good before the injury.
Last year was weird.
So what do we expect here going forward?
It was strange because early in the season, I think Lamar was playing really well, and in particular as a passer. Like all the stuff from Mike Sando's Quarterback Tears article, you know, the anonymous quotes and all that kind of stuff, and the idea that Lamar can't pass if you put him in must-pass situations, game's done. Like half of the counter to that people were pulling was from last year, the start of last year, right? Remember, Kansas City was Baltimore's bogey team, the team that I'd said all along, like, theoretically, Baltimore is built to stop this Kansas City Chiefs offense, and they hadn't done it yet. In part because of that exact scenario. They kept getting put in must-pass situations, and that's not where they thrive. It happened again, only this time Lamar actually did pass their way to a victory. And the same thing against the Colts later in Week 5. Like, he passed for 400 yards, four touchdowns, was down 18 points or something, quite, you know, way into the game, and dragged them back to that. He was doing all the things that he was being criticized before for not doing. And then his play just kind of fell off, and he went from being amazing to being average to being below average to being actually kind of bad by the time that he went down. And that's the sort of thing, is we think, oh, well, they lost Lamar Jackson, so of course the Ravens fell off late in the season. But actually, at the point where Lamar went down, there wasn't really a big difference between him and Tyler Huntley coming in.
Like, there were a few games where Tyler Huntley made a nice comeback against the Packers and stuff. Like, he balled out a couple games.
Typically, you know, Lamar Jackson goes down his MVP season and Huntley comes in, it would be a big problem.
Right.
Lamar going down at the point where he went down last year, the difference between him and Tyler Huntley playing was not that substantial. Like, that I don't think was what did for the Ravens last year. It was more like the entire secondary got hurt, right? And they're calling up guys from the practice squad and saying, hey, go out there and cover Davante Adams. Good luck. That was a bigger problem than Tyler Huntley.
Yeah, through 7 weeks last year, Lamar had three game grades over 80. He had that comeback against the Colts. I mean, just one of the most ridiculous passing games of all last season, right? He goes 37 for 43. They were down, I think it was 22-3 at the time. It's Monday Night Football. I've said this a lot. There's a lot of Lamar fans. There's a lot of Lamar detractors. And it's, now I know every quarterback has that, right? But it's one of those, like, if you're watching the game and keeping an eye on social media, as soon as something good happens, they're like, oh, see, I told you Lamar could do this. And then when something bad happens, I told you Lamar can't pass. I mean, this was like the game for like the Lamar supporters against the Colts, comeback opportunity, must pass. He had 6 incompletions on 43 attempts. That's crazy. 90.7 passing grade. He did have a fumble in there as a runner, but he was fantastic. And it looked like he was kind of back from a, you know, MVP caliber season standpoint, but with some new additions, which was a downfield passing attack. And but it just kind of fell apart from there, Sam. You know, his last 4 full games, here are the game grades: 59, 50, 41, 44. So his last few games before getting hurt against the Cleveland Browns, Lamar was not great. That includes, you know, a couple games that were okay statistically. So the turnover-worthy plays were the issue. He had 10 over those last 4 full games. 10 turnover-worthy plays. It was kind of like what we talked about with Dak. It just kind of came out of nowhere. So though there are questions. There were, what was it, 8 total games with multiple turnover-worthy plays last year. That was not there as in the MVP caliber season for Lamar Jackson. So I think he's got those questions to answer, right? Overall, though, as a passer, he's still good. As a runner, he's so dynamic. Everything else around him becomes better. The offensive line becomes better. The runners, you know, the running backs usually average 5 yards a pop because of what Lamar really brings to the table. So I think Lamar bounces back, and I think Baltimore bounces back, and they should be right up there with the Bengals in the AFC North.
Yeah, it's still a unique offense, and that makes it challenging. And Lamar is a unique playmaker, and that makes everything challenging. The question is going to be, do they have enough around him for that offense to still be a really top-tier unit? And we've talked a little bit before about that wide receiver group, which is arguably as bad as Green Bay's on paper. Once you trade away Marquise Brown, now Rashad Bateman is the number one, Devin Duvernay, Tylan Wallace, James Prochet. Like, these are not top-tier receivers, with the possible exception of Bateman, who needs to take a step if he's going to be that number one guy. The difference between them and Green Bay, as we talked about, is you do have Mark Andrews.
Right.
Mark Andrews posted a 91.5 grade last year. That guy...
didn't matter if it was Josh Johnson coming off the street.
Right.
Tyler Huntley, didn't matter.
Absolutely quarterback-proof over the course of the season. Also led all tight ends in yards, had 1,361 yards as a tight end.
Crazy.
With those... you know, the problems at quarterback in terms of injuries and stuff. Had almost 10 touchdowns. Like, he was an absolute monster last year. So that is a differentiator. And, you know, they're a team that does flow through the tight end more than they flow through wide receivers anyway. Mark Andrews had 149 targets last year. That's a big part when you consider, you know, Lamar Jackson's rushing threat, the rushing threat generally, which should be better. Remember last year the entire backfield got hurt before the season. J.K. Dobbins coming back, Gus Edwards coming back, Mike Davis signed. This should be a powerful rushing attack, an offensive line that's been, you know, retooled a little bit and should be reasonable. And then Mark Andrews is the primary receiving threat, leaving Rashad Bateman to sort of be that number two guy and see how much better he can get.
Yeah, I think, you know, I mentioned the other day it seemed like the Cowboys were one of a few teams who got worse. The Ravens, I don't think, got worse, but you definitely look at the receiving core and say, okay, that's not as good as it was last year. But I think it's part of their process, you know, because when they traded Marquise Brown, you're getting a Tyler Linderbaum and extra picks in return. I am looking forward to see what their running game is. I want to stick with my draft narrative that Tyler Linderbaum, an undersized center who is not really the prototype for what Baltimore has done previously, that they're drafting him to do something different offensively, to add more to their rushing attack, to add more perhaps zone runs and pin and pull type schemes where you're getting the center out into space. I think there's some flexibility there because he's like a Jason Kelce like space center. You know, you don't see those guys that are just so good zone blocking, getting out in space. Of course, they have the great Morgan Moses, replacing the great Alejandro Villanueva at right tackle. So the Ravens are always the team that I think makes a whole bunch of little moves that add up to their roster being better. And that includes Linderbaum. And I also can't wait to see what Kyle Hamilton does in that secondary with all the other investment that they've had there. Marlon Humphrey, Marcus Peters. If Hamilton is as good as we thought as a prospect at safety, this could be the best secondary in the NFL if everybody's healthy.
Yeah, their draft generally was fascinating, actually, when you look at all the players that they brought in. And Hamilton is – his usage is going to be a really important part of how good he is, I think. When – do you see that, you know, one of the training camp videos – was him getting absolutely torched by some nobody slot receiver.
Who?
Hamilton.
Hamilton, yeah.
So he was like one-on-one in off coverage against a tiny little slot receiver who I don't know who it was. Got torched, you know. But it's like, okay, but that isn't his game, right? Like, that's not what he's supposed to be doing. And if he is doing that a lot, the Ravens are probably not going to get a ton out of him positive. But let's assume that that's just part of training camp. You go through one-on-one drills, and it happened. So how they use Hamilton in this defense will be interesting. But when you look at all the players that they drafted, it's kind of a really intriguing group. Linderbaum, who has the questions of A, fit within this offense, B, you know, is he as amazing as his college tape suggests, or is the undersized thing actually a problem at the next level? Just how good is he? They drafted Kyle Hamilton, we talked about. They were obviously the team that took the gamble, if you like, on David Ojabo after he blew out it was an Achilles, right? Rather than an ACL at his pro day.
I think Achilles.
I think it's an Achilles. Anyway, they were the team that took the chance on him. They were also the team that drafted Daniel Faalele, the monstrous, giant, 380-pound right tackle for out of Minnesota. They were the team that took Travis Jones, you know, the sort of the Jordan Davis light, I guess, in terms of monstrous nose tackle in a league that isn't really going in that direction. Just a whole bunch of really interesting types of players. And they took all of them in the one draft class.
Right.
So seeing how this draft class specifically pans out in year one is going to be interesting, not least of which because one of our fan bets is on that.
Oh, that's right, on Ravens War versus Patriots War.
Yeah.
On the draft classes. Yeah, I mean, look, all those little moves adding up, you know, letting Orlando Brown walk, essentially getting Odafe Owe as a pass rusher. Opposite him, now you have Owe, Justin Houston, Tyus Bowser. They've always been a team, even with Wink Martindale moving on, a team that likes to create pressure, play man on the back end. I really can't wait to see how they deploy that secondary, though. Just to go back to Kyle Hamilton, they also add in Marcus Williams, who's one of the best pure free safeties in the league. Chuck Clark has been one of the best move around safety linebacker types over the last couple of years. He's been kind of their positionless guy. Where does Kyle Hamilton fit into that equation? And like I said earlier, if they all stay healthy, Marcus Peters, Kyle Fuller, Marlon Humphrey at corner, it's deep. It's deep. They had Humphrey, once Marcus Peters went down last year, they had Humphrey moving all over the place, playing in the slot, playing outside. His grade took a hit, I think, because his role was a lot more challenging, right? He's the guy playing one-on-one with Jamar Chase and then kicking inside to the slot. So there's a lot of intriguing pieces on the back end for the Ravens. All of this comes down to, though, I think Lamar, right, and the quarterback position, what happens there. A lot of people push back on the will the league adjust to Lamar question, but if you look at his grades going from 90 to 79 to 70, I think you do have to ask the question. I'm going to pose the question. I've said this on a podcast before. His career path right now, even though I like him more than the guy I'm about to say, his career path right now looks kind of similar to Carson Wentz.
God.
I'm just saying. That's what it is. I'm not saying it's going to be like that going forward, but Lamar's got to turn it around. That was year two peak and then kind of a slip back closer to mediocrity in the next year. I thought 2020 was fine for Lamar, wasn't special, but last year, the way it ended and the fact that he only played full games through week 13, it was an average to below average season for Lamar Jackson by pretty much every measure, and that's where Wentz was for a few years. I'm not saying he's going to follow that pattern, but I'm saying that, like, if you're objective about this, that's the pattern so far with Lamar Jackson, other than the fact that Lamar brings so much to the run game, you would give him the edge over Wentz. But the regression from the year two peak is there for Lamar Jackson right now.
I think Lamar is so dangerous and special and unique that the league will never figure him out in the way that the league never figured out Barry Sanders, right? Those guys are just so talented, so good, and so impossible to stop that it doesn't matter what plan you have, they're going to end up neutralizing it at some point. Now, where it does get a little bit more nuanced is that I think the league is better at defending him than they were when he first showed up, and they literally had no clue how to stop it. Now they know what to do, but that doesn't mean you're going to get it done. So where I think you can see elements of this is if you start looking at Lamar Jackson's rushing numbers and look at how many big plays he's had in his career. last year in terms of like breakaway runs, those sort of 15-plus yard runs, he only had a couple of them all year. And that was from, I think he had 15 or 13 or something in his best season. I think defenses are way better now at kind of bottling him up and at least saying, all right, he's going to get some plays. There's going to be some big plays in here. But let's try and make sure that like every time the guy pulls the ball, he's not beating one guy and going 50 yards, because that's a real problem. So kind of the way that teams started to develop a way of hemming in Barry Sanders over the course of his career, you just had a better methodology of understanding how to contain him. Now, you wouldn't get it done. Eventually, he'd make somebody look like an idiot, including a Hall of Fame, you know, Hall of Famers left, right, and center, and he'd bust one off anyway. But it's a better process than when you're just going out there and playing like regular defense and hoping that that still applies to a guy to whom the rules don't apply. So I think defenses are a little bit better at understanding who and what Lamar Jackson is and how to cause him problems in a way that they weren't when they were sort of first seeing him.
But he's still
special enough that like his baseline should be Pro Bowl kind of caliber quarterback.
I just want to say, I don't think it's insulting to ask, will the league adjust to Lamar Jackson? That's literally every single quarterback needs to deal with that. What did the league needed to adjust to Tom Brady and Drew Brees and Patrick Mahomes and Kyler Murray, like all of these guys, how the league adjusts to them and then how they adjust back.
Yeah.
And I just want to say there's a lot of quarterbacks recently, including Wentz, including Lamar Jackson, including Mahomes, including Burrow right now, who were excellent in year two. And now the question is, okay, the league has film on you. They're going to do things differently, schematically, strategically. They're going to do, and so the best quarterbacks adjust, whatever that might be. And the best players in the NFL have to adjust to what the league does. So that's true for everybody.
Yeah, I think we just need to be careful how we phrase it, because the adjusting to a quarterback and him having to adjust to the adjustment and continue to be dominant is one thing. The sort of phrase a lot of people use is, you know, has the league figured out player X? The league figured out certain players. You know, they showed up. They'd never seen it before. It was like, oh, they had real success in year one or year two. By year three, the league understood what they were doing, kind of shut them down, and that guy was no longer a massive factor.
Oh, yeah, I don't see that.
And maybe that was what happened to Carson Wentz. I would argue that certainly happened to Kaepernick even before all of his, you know, knee things. And I know his last season was statistically pretty good, but overall, the performance wasn't nearly as good.
Dr. Eager breaking in over here.
I don't think that's relevant to Lamar Jackson. Like, I don't think the league is capable of figuring out, quote-unquote, Lamar Jackson. I think he's in the same boat as Patrick Mahomes is right now, which is the league has figured out things that they don't like.
Yeah,
and they've
attacked weaknesses. Right. They've made him, you know, play to their weaknesses a little bit more.
So Patrick Mahomes last season had the worst, quote-unquote, year of his career. The worst year of Patrick Mahomes' career was still 4,800 yards, 37 touchdowns, 13 interceptions, 66, you know, completion rate. It was still insane, right? It's a career year by pretty much everybody else's standards, but that is the league adjusting to him.
Yeah.
That's still like a percentage off what Patrick Mahomes is capable of. I think the same thing has happened to Lamar Jackson right now. We've seen defenses, you know, regroup, rehuddle, and lop off 10% of Lamar Jackson. Now the onus is on him to go back into the lab and find that 10% again.
Yep, and I think like so I agree with you there. It's not the league has figured out, but every young quarterback in particular has to be able to adjust to the new things that are thrown at them. I can't wait to see what the Ravens do. I really believe, like, Lamar has, just to reiterate too, Lamar's rushing yards come from the design running game. He is not a run-around scrambler. He can scramble. That's not his game. He likes to sit in the pocket, go through reads. When he runs, it's by design. It's part of the run game. He had one zone run last year, like zone blocking scheme run for Lamar Jackson. I want to see if that is an adjustment that the Ravens make, because you could start getting these guys into space a little bit more, and that's it. You just get them into space and play. So Lamar Jackson, will he adjust a little bit? Will the Ravens adjust a little bit? They don't have as good of a receiving core, I don't think, this year than last year, but does it matter less for the Ravens because of how they run the ball? I think that's going to be the big question here. So over-under is 9.5 here for the Baltimore Ravens. Where are you going with that?
Over.
over.
Yeah.
For the Ravens.
Well, I mean, people, they're the classic worst to first candidate because somehow they can they collapsed down the season, down the stretch last year to end up bottom of a really tough division. But they were the number one seed in the AFC quite deep into the season. Then all of their injuries really started to bite deep. If we assume that isn't going to happen again, the Ravens should be legit contenders. And even in a tough division, that's double-digit wins.
The best place to play fantasy football this summer is Underdog Fantasy. Their Best Ball Mania tournament has $10 million in total prize money. And the best part is you just draft your fantasy football team and that's it. There's no waivers, no trades, no in-season management. Underdog gives you your best score each week of the season and the highest scores at the end of the year win. The champion of Best Ball Mania drafted last year during the summer just like now. So there's no time like the present to join Underdog and take your shot at $1 million draft. Plus, Underdog is going to double your first deposit up to $100 when you sign up with the promo code PFF. Also, if you play 10 of those dollars using promo code PFF, you get a free PFF subscription. So what are you waiting for? Head to underdogfantasy.com or the App Store, play $10 with code PFF, and draft your Best Ball Mania team today. Are we on to the Bengals? We're on to Cincinnati. On to Cincinnati. Cincinnati Bengals, our hometown, defending AFC champions. Cincinnati Bengals. Do you think you were going to be saying that last year at this time?
No. No, I don't think anybody did.
It's a different feeling around town now.
The possible exception of Joe Burrow.
Sometimes it's easy to just look back and say, well, the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, of course. They were much better last year. But there was a point. Every team has these roller coasters, right? I mean, there was a point where they were the number one seed early on. It's like, hey, the Bengals are kind of for real. They just took it to the Ravens. And then they lay an egg against Mike White and the Jets. Right, I mean, it was like, why the Bengals just can't get out of their own way, but they figured it out. And I think the story of last season was early on, Joe Burrow's coming off the knee injury. They're protecting him because the offensive line's still not good. They're running the offense through Joe Mixon, especially in the second half. And there was a point where they flipped the switch and said, okay, Joe, it's your team. Go out there, chuck it 45, 50 times in some key games down the stretch, and he showed up. And you combine that with Ja'Marr Chase becoming one of the best, not just receivers. I think I was surprised that Ja'Marr Chase was as good of a big play receiver as he was, both after the catch and, of course, down the field. I knew he'd win down the field, but maybe not as often as he did. So the Bengals have one of the best trios of receivers, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. Joe Burrow, top PFF grade last year. Great offense. They added so much to the offensive line, and the defense really stepped up down the stretch in some key games, obviously.
Yeah, Cincinnati had an incredible year last year. I think it's a very difficult one to level set heading into this year. I wrote a piece that was sort of bold predictions about every team. And one of my bold predictions for Cincinnati is that they won't make the playoffs this year. So defending AFC champions might not make the postseason. And look,
as I tweet out, can the Bengals return to the Super Bowl to try to get people in here to listen to you?
I think that
they're going to be so mad when they get here.
Yeah. There was some guy who tweeted me, he was big mad. I can't remember what his name was, but man wasn't happy. Harold or something. Harold was not amused. But so look, I think it's fair to say that Cincinnati overachieved last year. And I think it's obvious that Cincinnati recognized that they overachieved last year. It would have been easy, and teams have done this before. You know, you go on a run, you overachieve, you make a Super Bowl, and you just sort of think that you're like one piece away and you'll get back there next year because all the other things are there. The Bengals didn't do that. They made the Super Bowl, understood that they kind of overachieved, what needed a crazy run to make this happen. And if they didn't fix the offensive line, there was no shot of them getting back next year. So they went out and they completely overhauled that line in the offseason. I think they did a great job of that, turning their biggest weakness by a distance into what should be fine. It should be a solid offensive line this season. And that's huge for them. But it doesn't really change the fact that they did catch that lightning in a bottle with Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and all the things that needed to happen for them to go on that run. And when you look at what everybody else did in the AFC in terms of getting better and the contenders that are out there and how tough that division is, it wouldn't take much for them to go from where they were to missing out entirely next year. You know, Baltimore comes back, and if they're as strong as they could be if they stay healthy, like Cleveland all of a sudden may not be missing their quarterback for the entire season. That Cleveland roster is really good. I'm not saying it will happen. It was a bold prediction as opposed to, you know, here's a thing to stake your life on. But it wouldn't take that much for Cincinnati to still be a good team, but fall short of the playoffs.
You're just trying to create intriguing content over there, Sam, even if you don't fully believe it, right?
I mean, I think it's because the Bengals are kind of, I think they're a very fashionable pick right now for a team that is really good, that, you know, did a great job in the offseason, that has Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase and all these kinds of things. It just, they feel like a team to tap the brakes on a little bit.
And look, as a Bengals fan, you should be confident, right? You should be excited. Not only,
oh, yeah, I mean, it's better than a year ago when you're looking at this and thinking we're just bad.
We thought Joe Burrow was good last year at this time, but he stepped up and confirmed, all right, he's among the elite quarterbacks.
This time a year ago, he was coming back off a major knee injury, and you're like, it's not a given that Burrow is going to come back the same guy he was as a rookie, let alone take, you know, at least two very big steps forward and become one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL, absolutely balling, you know, balling out. Like, it was Burrow's future a year ago, given the injury he had, was up in the air, and we were kind of hoping that he didn't lose anything and he could continue to get better.
So the story of this offseason for the second straight year for the Bengals was, what do you do with the offensive line? Last year it was Ja'Marr Chase versus Penei Sewell. Okay, you didn't draft Penei Sewell, you got a receiver instead. And the line wasn't great, but I think it also kind of proved out this wide receiver over tackle strategy, because they still had this incredibly explosive offense despite an offensive line that was not a great pass blocking unit. Now you kept the one guy that you could trust, Jonah Williams, who's not great. He's been solid. He's been just above league average over the last couple of years. You kept him and you add in three capable starters, right? Ted Karras, Alex Kappa, Lyle Collins. Karras and Kappa, they got in at reasonable prices in free agency. They got them early, signed them. They waited for Lyle Collins to get released by the Dallas Cowboys. He'll step in at right tackle. Those are three legitimate upgrades. I'm not saying they're all going to the Pro Bowl or they're all pros. Collins could, but they are legitimate upgrades over what they had previously, and that should be much better for Joe Burrow, who took 50-something sacks last year, which is partly on him, but again, he was under some quick pressure at times too.
They've gone certainly from late in the year from 1 out of 5 starters being viable to 4 out of 5 starters being viable, and hoping they can fill the fifth one with, you know, a combination of Jackson Carmen or whoever, trying to figure out if they can get viable play out of that fifth one. Like, if they can, that's huge. And everybody's sort of looking at this and saying, oh, what that's going to do for Joe Burrow, and it will. Like, it'll make his life a hell of a lot easier. But think about what it's going to do for Joe Mixon as well. Mixon, I think, averaged 4.1 yards per carry last year and was still second or third in the NFL in rushing yardage, because they just, like, he was one of the 3-4 workhorse running backs in the NFL these days. Mixon had to do a lot of that himself. He averaged 3.1 yards per carry after contact. So, like, that's if you're over 3 yards per carry after contact, you're doing a lot of good work. To be doing that, and that's harder to achieve the lower your overall number is, right? If you're not getting an awful lot of help from your offensive line, and I think only the Texans gave their running backs a larger amount of yardage on average before contact than the Bengals. The Bengals were like at 0.8 yards or something. So as much as we sort of look at those upgrades and say, that's great for Joe Burrow, it'll make his life easier, more time to throw, all those kinds of things, it should also dramatically improve the space that Joe Mixon has to work in. And if he was able to get into the top couple, where was he, third, in rushing yardage last year, 1,200 yards, 13 touchdowns, with really, really bad run blocking in front of him. I mean, Mixon could lead the league in rushing this year.
Yeah, and the Bengals with the, so run blocking should be improved. Bengals had the fourth worst pass blocking grade, including the playoffs. Joe Burrow was sacked 51 times, league high, during the regular season, 70 when you include the playoffs, because he had those just crazy games. We've talked a lot here at PFF about how the sack total itself and even pressure rate is very much on the quarterback. So when you're looking at Burrow, the offensive line, sure, it hasn't been good the last couple of years, but he's got to get rid of the ball quicker, right? And that he's got to make better decisions. Part of it with Burrow, and he's defended the sack totals at times where it's like, hey, I'm extending plays, right? Sometimes I'm going to take a negative play, but the offset is I'm going to make a big play every now and again. I think there was a point in Deshaun Watson's career, there was a point in Russell Wilson's career where we've posed this question, right? Those are a couple guys who have taken just way too many negative plays through the years. How do you balance the big play ability versus just staying on schedule, just getting rid of the ball when you need to? I think that'll be a big question for Burrow in his development here. Defensively, the under, you know, underrated story of last season was Trey Hendrickson in free agency and Chidobe Awuzie and Mike Hilton in free agency, all coming in and really not making big plays in particular down the stretch, but making that defense better. And they did a nice job schematically adjusting to offenses, being more of a game plan oriented defense. And then even in the draft, you know, going with Dax Hill early on, bringing in Cam Taylor-Britt, you know, just adding flexibility to that secondary. I really like the Bengals team building effort and where they've been going these last couple of years.
Yeah, I think they've done a great job. The defense will be fascinating to watch because I think they've had a lot of good players. They have, again, attacked areas of weakness and made them not weaknesses, not necessarily strengths, but definitely stopped them being problems. One thing that will be intriguing is whether the players that, I don't want to say overachieved again, but the players that looked very, very good last year are able to maintain that kind of level. So Trey Hendrickson,
Awuzie had a career year for sure.
Awuzie had a career year. Trey Hendrickson had a career year coming off a career year. So his last year with New Orleans, it was like, wow, those are some numbers that scream regression. You know, you're buying high signing Trey Hendrickson given the year he just had, and then he had a better one. That, I mean, it, obviously it's great for Cincinnati's perspective, but can he keep that up, or was that, you know, is that too much of an outlier in consecutive seasons? DJ Reader had a great year as well. Like, there were some very good seasons from guys on that defense that were not necessarily what you would expect going forward, but they've offset that with the additions that they've made.
Over under for the Bengals is 10. So yeah, over at DraftKings, our friends over at DraftKings, they've got them at 10, Ravens at 9.5. So they're even believing in the Bengals a little bit more. I do think the Ravens, coming off of not making the playoffs and the injuries and stuff, the Ravens are probably a little underrated. You seem to believe the Bengals might be a little overrated. You better watch your back around here, Cincinnati, Sam.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, I would lean under. What did we say it was, 10?
10. Now, yeah. I think they have the best quarterback in the division. We're going to put Burrow over Lamar at this point?
Over Lamar, over, you know, a...
Over Deshaun Watson.
Over Deshaun Watson
there.
If we, you know...
We have to talk about
if
that.
If we talk about on football as opposed to him as a person. I don't know. Comparing him to either of those guys, actually, they both have the same number of elite, truly elite seasons, but the other two probably have a larger track record of just good play. Maybe we need one more year of Joe Burrow to put him conclusively above either of those guys. He's certainly the one for whom we've seen it the most recently.
I mean, Burrow has to... I mean, I like him. I think he's really good, just like I think Justin Herbert's really good. But, I mean, the same thing we're saying about Lamar. The NFL's going to do certain things to put, you know, Joe Burrow in less comfortable spots. Which throws does he not like? Force him to make those, that type of thing. So him having a 90-plus grade again next year, I mean, that's not necessarily a lock. I'd be encouraged if I'm the Bengals, but it doesn't mean he's always going to be, you know, a top three quarterback every single year from a production standpoint. If he regresses a little bit, comes back down to earth, it's going to be more challenging. But I just like the way the Bengals are built. The O-line's going to be better. Try to cover Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. You lose a C.J. Uzomah, who's solid, but you get Drew Sample and Hayden Hurst there. You still, I mean, it's three wide receivers. That's going to be your group there. Try to cover us, guys. But, like, if they continue down this path, I think of it's Burrow's team, we're going to win through the pass game, Bengals are still going to be tough to beat, man.
I also think it's going to be how Ja'Marr Chase does in year two will be, you know, something to watch, because it's not that he overachieved year one, but I think he did take a lot of people by surprise, you know, and I keep mentioning that Marlon Humphrey play in particular, where he just did not expect Ja'Marr Chase to be that good, that fast, that, you know, able to wreck him on a given rep, and you're not going to take anybody by surprise again. So you're actually going to have to win just by being better than everybody else. And look, he's well capable of that. We saw that late in the season. But there is an element that it's going to be harder in year two. Now, I still think, look, ultimately, Justin Jefferson backed it up in year two. I think there's truth to the idea that Ja'Marr Chase was a better wide receiver than Justin Jefferson in college. He may still be a better wide receiver than Justin Jefferson in the NFL, but it is a different thing to back it up in year two after the year of just surprising people.
Yeah, it's always interesting because, you remember the final thing, which was the Bengals went to the Super Bowl. But along the way, too, I mentioned they lose to the Browns. Like, Baker Mayfield, we think, is just this, you know, trash quarterback who got kicked out of Cleveland. Like, the Baker Mayfield's Browns beat the Bengals 41-16 in the middle of the season. The Bengals getting to the Super Bowl, you're a play away. You beat the Raiders basically by a couple plays. You beat the Titans by three. You beat the Chiefs by three. You have to make a huge comeback. It's just it's a fine line to repeat. So I agree. I don't think they're going to repeat. I think it's just too deep in the AFC. I'll go Bengal. Did I pick the Ravens? Ravens over. I'll take Bengals over too.
All right. I'll take Bengals under. But I will say that the AFC is just going to be such a nightmare to try and pick which ones of these good teams are going to be good and which ones are going to be the teams that miss out. The Bengals may be a better team than last year and go from the Super Bowl to missing the playoffs. Like, that's how tough the AFC is.
Yeah, good teams are going to win eight games. There's going to be a really good team that is a good team that's going to have an eight next to their win total.
Right.
Or a nine.
And Cincinnati is well capable of winning double-digit games and being the best team in their division, but they're also well capable of being that team.
Gentlemen, all men strive for gold in their life, right? Gold medals, gold watches, gold everything. However, there's a certain type of man who goes the extra mile. He walks with the confidence of an eagle and giggles in the face of danger. He's a big, hairless winning machine. And when he unzips his pants, he sees platinum. You missed this, Reed, didn't you? That's right. Manscaped would like to introduce to you their best and biggest ultimate hygiene bundle yet. It's the Platinum Package 4.0. Manscaped is the leader in below-the-waist grooming, so now trust them with the whole shebang. Join the 4 million men worldwide who trust Manscaped by going to manscaped.com for 20% off plus free shipping with the code PFF. Manscaped's brand new Platinum Package 4.0 is the biggest bundle they've ever offered. Easy for me to say. Giving you a bulk discount on Manscaped's top products. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code PFF. It's manscaped.com. 20% off, free shipping, manscaped.com. Use the code PFF. It's time you enjoyed the finer things in life and get yourself a platinum package for your platinum package. All right, we're on to Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Cleveland Browns. I think no matter... We try to make these evergreen, Sam. If someone listens to this in mid-August or late August, something's going to change because we don't know exactly what's going to happen with the Deshaun Watson saga. As of right now, he's suspended for 6 games. That's been appealed by the NFL. Presumably, they're going to step. It's not going to be Roger Goodell stepping in, where he does have final say. It's going to be another independent arbiter.
Yeah.
And the NFL is seeking a year. Is the terminology that was texted to all of the NFL insiders.
Yeah, which is the thing that's been true all along. Like, that's been the report. That was where the reports were when we expected it to be a year, because the NFL wants a year, and they were trying to negotiate this out. The whole thing is weird.
I don't know the legality of this, but if they give him a year, everybody's saying, okay, he's going to sue.
Yeah.
That goes to court, but does that pause the suspension?
Yeah, presumably, yes.
So if that pauses the suspension, Watson might play week one. He might play the entire season, and then the season suspension occurs next year if it's upheld.
Yeah.
Or whatever suspension happens next year. So we really don't know what's going to happen with this whole thing.
No. The only thing that I think is kind of new, I guess. So one of the concerns with, we have to let this all play out. There's 23, 24 civil lawsuits. He never got charged. He was sort of... They declined to bring charges twice, a grand jury, in terms of criminal charges. There were 24 civil cases out there. And the people that defend Deshaun Watson were always like, we still don't know anything, right? The criminal cases disappeared. He's working to get the civil cases to disappear. They're up to 23, I think, now, have settled, right? So we're very close from him being able to make all of the legal stuff go away entirely, right? And emerge from this with plausible deniability of saying, nothing. My name is clear. There is no black mark against my name. The one thing that's new is this suspension that was the first suspension done by somebody not named Raj, right? They outsourced the discipline thing because Raj had made such a pig's ear of it in the past to this legal counsel, Sue L. Robinson, whatever her name is. And so she did the 6 games, gave her written decision. And in that written decision, she basically said, the guy is sketchy. Like
predatory.
Yes. I don't know that she used the word predatory.
Predatory behavior.
But definitely said that the NFL made its case, and she accepted that he was guilty, essentially, of sexual assault by the NFL's definition, as opposed to any legal definition of sexual sexual assault slash sexual misconduct of predatory behavior. Essentially, the NFL was right that he did this stuff, but owing to precedent, which is ridiculous because the precedent was so bad that they outsourced it to her in the first place. Like, your purpose is to deviate from the precedent anyway. But the precedent bound her to 6 games, so that's what they are. But if you're a defender of Deshaun Watson at this point and saying, oh, there's no proof in anything, and the legal cases aren't, you know, conclusive, and there may be no evidence, the NFL's independent arbiter of this has agreed that what he did is wrong. To the point where even with the 6 games, she's saying, but by the way, don't let this guy anywhere near a masseuse that isn't like a team assigned one for the rest of his career, not like for this season or the next month.
Team assigned,
like. But like, don't ever let him near, you know, just a random masseuse again.
Because the standards in civil cases and all that stuff are different too, right? Like, an actual trial is beyond reasonable doubt, right? Beyond a shadow of a doubt.
Beyond reasonable
versus
more likely than not.
More likely than not, right? So we're talking 100% versus 50%.
Yeah.
Which is why it's less about innocent or guilty when it comes down to this. That's why the NFL can suspend on him, right? Because there's some people who are like, oh, he never got tried in court, but you don't need that necessarily, right? It's enough people have found him guilty, plus, okay, he settled all of these various cases.
My only point in all this is if you are a Deshaun Watson defender, you need to understand at this point that what you are defending is, all I care about is the football. Like, I'm a Browns fan. I want the Browns to win games. Deshaun Watson is the best thing for the Browns winning games. Therefore, I don't care that he had a bunch of... that he was a sexual predator. I don't care. That's what you're saying. And look, that's an opinion. It's not one that many people are going to agree with, but it's an opinion, and you're entitled to it. This is the world we live in. But you need to understand that's what you're arguing at this point.
Isn't this how the NFL wanted this to kind of be set up, though, right? They're like, hey, we're... The NFL wants a year. Independent arbiter here is saying six games. We're not going to let that happen. We're going to appeal. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know the legal stuff here, but there's a lot of people saying it was kind of set up for the appeal by the NFL. Nobody cares about image more than the NFL.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, they literally make decisions based off what the people are saying, right? What which way the wind's blowing. And that's how they make decisions, right? The people are saying this. We gotta listen to the people. So the NFL's setting up to try to look like the good guy after years of looking like the bad guy. So they're swooping in and saying, we want a year here. So all that said, Deshaun Watson might be the quarterback for the Browns, and he might not be.
Yeah, we're back in limbo from when having thought we had some kind of resolution here. We're back to it could be 6 games, it could be a year, it could be nothing for this year.
It does seem like 6 was not enough games, though. I think
I would agree.
We'll stick with that. So, the rest of the Browns football team to discuss here. Making prediction on them and all that stuff is going to be challenging here. But the rest of the team, I do think it looks pretty good. I also don't think I'm as excited. I don't know that their roster is as good as it's been the last year or two either. I think it's good. But, you know, there's more questions on the offensive line than they've had previously just by losing a J.C. Tretter up front. Yes, you add in an Amari Cooper, but however you wanted to handle last year on paper, they had Odell Beckham Jr. and Jarvis Landry. Is this actually better as a group? And they'll probably perform better than those guys, but I don't know for sure. And then defensively, it looks similar to last year. So what are you looking for from the Browns from a overall roster standpoint?
Well, this is why I've said, like, if they're willing to just burn this year, you know, with the idea of the greater good, that in the next several years you have Deshaun Watson a quarterback and we can just torch this year and it's still better, right, than sticking with Baker Mayfield or whatever the alternatives were. The risk of that is it's really hard to maintain a really good roster in the NFL. And as you said, you can look at this one, you can say, hang on, there's a crack here that wasn't there a year ago, there's a crack there that wasn't there a year ago, and, you know, you've used that term whack-a-mole before, that you end up just trying to hammer these problem spots that pop up. if you just torch a year and say, forget it, we're not contending this year, that was a year where this roster is still really good. And still really good, but arguably heading in the wrong direction. So it's a really risky thing to do if that is the strategy. But yeah, I agree with you. I think the wide receiver, I love trading for Amari Cooper. I think he is a guy that will make a difference to an offense. And maybe he isn't a superstar number one wide receiver, but he's more than good enough to make a material difference to whoever the quarterback is. He can win in all different ways. He can essentially be that number one X receiver light. You know, maybe he just doesn't do it as consistently as he should, but he's able to win in all the ways you need that guy to win. The rest of that group is quite a question mark. You know, Donovan Peoples-Jones seemed to specialize in spectacular catches and nothing else. Does that continue with a better quarterback? Anthony Schwartz got people really excited very early on because he can run really fast, but then it emerged that he couldn't really do much else.
Got me excited. That's what I like, speed.
Yeah, but even like his college tape was like, okay, that guy's like really fast, even by SEC standards, but doesn't really know how to play receiver.
I was complimenting. It looked like in week one they had a plan for Schwartz. Like, yeah, we're just going to use your speed. You get a couple jet sweeps here and there, but you're going to be a downfield threat. And it just, he doesn't have the ball skills right now. But right, if those materialize, it's a lot of what ifs in this receiving core, though, is what I think what you're getting to.
Yeah,
here.
The backfield is obviously stupidly talented, but you're right. The offensive line probably isn't as good as it was a year ago. It should still be good, but it's a question how good that whole offense is going to be. Plus, by the way, like, even if Deshaun Watson is the quarterback, dude sat out entire year. You know, who knows what he's going to look like in a new environment and a new team with this kind of pressure on him of his own making, whatever. But those things are going to affect the guy.
Even just Watson's career grades, we're talking, we were lower on him his rookie season than the production, 68 grade,
right,
in part because of what he did in his debut. But he had an 80 grade, an 82 grade, and then he jumped up to 92, which was weird because it was in the year that the Texans only won four games and they were terrible. But that roster just got worse and worse. And, Watson was a good quarterback who I think elevated those around him until the year he didn't, right? Like, until the year he just couldn't do it in 2020 and everything fell apart. But there are still questions about is he a low 80s quarterback, using PFF terms, is he a low 80s quarterback or a 90? Is he up in that 90 range? We still don't really know. With Watson.
Yeah. The defense I really like, with the exception of like defensive tackle. I mean, somebody needs to step up and provide any kind of baseline of play. And so far, there's not a ton of evidence of anybody suggesting they're going to do that.
Team building wise, it seems like they've tried to just stitch it together. Jordan Elliott is a guy we really liked. He was a third rounder. He's disappointed. They bring in Taven Bryan, former first rounder. Is he going to slot in there? Sheldon Day. It really is stitch it together. Edge defender looked like a question mark, but they ended up circling back to Jadeveon Clowney, who was solid last year. Nice compliment to Myles Garrett. Jeremiah Owusu-Koramoah was fantastic as a rookie, went healthy at linebacker. And then I think, you know, the secondary is going to be the big thing, too. They invested so much in the secondary last year, just re-signed Denzel Ward to the big deal. So it's Denzel Ward and former first-rounder Greg Newsome and big free agent signing John Johnson. I mean, you just got to... Those guys have to be worth all of the money, I think, for the Browns to make their playoff push right here.
Yeah.
But it's a good roster, right?
It is.
The last 3 years.
What's their over under?
It's off the
Oh, we're
off
pulling
the board.
It. All bets are off with the.
Yeah. I mean, I'm certain I don't see it on DraftKings. It makes sense because you really don't know if you're
right.
Seeing, you know, 11 games of Watson, if you're seeing zero, if you're seeing, you might see 17 of Deshaun Watson if this, you know, if it becomes a crazy court battle. So I'm guessing it's in the, it's probably right there with the Ravens. 9.5 would be my guess. Like if Watson plays a full season, it's probably 9.5. If it's a 6-game suspension, it's probably 8. You know, that's my guess. But I think it's a good team. I think if you look at the Browns as a whole over the last 5 or 6 years, they have more depth than they had, you know, years ago, right? It's a different world with the Browns where they're not a laughing stock. It is a good football team.
Yeah. And it's generally
a competitive football team.
It has generally been well run over the last few years. I mean, Andrew Berry at GM, they've done a lot of good things. It's why it makes this whole thing that they jumped into this offseason so unusual, because they had you know, whatever you think about Baker Mayfield, and we've had this discussion, like, he was a viable starting quarterback. The question was how viable and how much money should he be thrown at from Cleveland. They decided, forget that, we're going to shoot for the moon, we're going to go for the upgrade, we're going to jump into the Deshaun Watson sweepstakes. And people have made the point that, remember, there was a while they weren't in the running. It wasn't Cleveland, it was Atlanta and New Orleans or whoever it were expected to win this Deshaun Watson thing, and then all of a sudden Cleveland jumped back into the driver's seat, right?
Yeah, probably when they guaranteed all of his money despite suspension.
Right, and I think, who was it, Andrew Brandt, I think, maybe somebody else was talking about this contract, and for, not just the guaranteed money, but there are other things within the contract that basically seem like it's been written by the agent, right? And you're like, well, how does that happen? It happens because, like, Cleveland is fourth in a four-horse race and jumps back into being first. Well, you do that by saying, okay, tell me what you want. Here's the blank check, essentially. So a really well-run team over the last few years is in limbo right now because of something they did.
Oh, it's never fun talking about any of this stuff. John Harbaugh had some comments about, essentially saying, hey, I like the way we do things in Baltimore as far as the players we choose. Not that they have, they've had their issues through the years, but have they learned and adjusted from that? I don't know.
That's one thing where it's like, look, everybody else needs to be very careful with the glass house they're throwing stones from. Cincinnati, right? We just talked about Joe Mixon potentially leading the league in rushing. I mean, Joe Mixon cold cocked somebody on camera, a woman on camera in college, right? We forget about that now because it was a while ago. Ben Roethlisberger, right? The man just retired. We celebrate his potentially Hall of Fame career. If we dig too far into the shadows, we find what Ben Roethlisberger was accused of. I'm just saying, it's one thing for those of us.
Lewis killed a guy.
All right.
Allegedly.
Have we got legal on this?
No.
Yeah, allegedly.
Allegedly. Is that covered?
For those of us that are without this
Ray
kind
Rice,
of sin,
Ray Lewis,
it's one thing to throw stones. If you were in charge of a team in the NFL, I would be very careful about slinging stones.
Am I going to get sued?
I mean, maybe.
You can't take that quote out of context. I said allegedly. There were accusations.
There was a big pause between, allegedly and the
we
rest.
We could stitch that together.
Yeah, cut it. Yeah.
Allegedly,
cut down
Ray
the
Lewis
okay.
And the whole thing. Obviously, you got to be careful with all that stuff. I mean, that's just humanity, which is why, everybody's got something. Anyway, I don't know what's going to happen here with the Browns.
Everybody's killed a guy.
I didn't say that.
No, you didn't.
Everybody's got something.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
So...
who amongst us doesn't have a body under the stairs?
Any other questions about the Cleveland Browns? Is Myles Garrett going to win Defensive Player of the Year? He did 92 grade last year. Looks like he could be ready to become the best edge defender right up there with TJ Watt of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Let's go to the Steelers.
Okay.
Say something nice about the Steelers. That's what the people want here.
Say something. I love the wider stuff that I'm the Steelers camp. So training camp videos, right? To me, it's like prior reinforcement season, right? I'm willing to embrace every video that is sent my way that is about a player that I liked in the draft process, right? And so far, there are a ton of videos of Calvin Austin and George Pickens dominating Steelers camp because Deontay Johnson is, they haven't got him under his new contract, so there's space. And those two guys are just balling out. I am here for it. I love those players, both of them.
Over-under for the Steelers is 7.
Yeah.
So Vegas is suggesting...
Now, the downside
is the end.
Reports from Steelers camp, and Steelers reporters are typically among the more optimistic, shall we say, sunny side
did
up.
Did you see them call us out? Were you there?
Who called us out?
It was, Kevin Dotson, right? It's Kevin, talking about his grades, the guard. And he said something about, my pass blocking has been good, but I want to be known for my run blocking. I want to be good. And that's my thing. That's what I like to do. And he's like, my PFF grades. He referenced his PFF grades about how we had him good as a pass blocker, not good as a run blocker. Uh-huh. And one of the media people at the end was like, oh, you got to lay off that PFF stuff.
Yeah.
Media people.
Over. Oh, there's.
They hate. I mean, if of all the media, team media people. Steelers are.
Well, look, this is not difficult to join the dots here, right? The Steelers media generally, as I've just said, is of the more optimistic, hopium-smoking variety, relative to the other 31 teams in the NFL. They are going to look at the sunny side. They are going to look at the paint-me-the-bright picture. They're essentially deluded, right, is what I'm saying. If you are deluded, what is one thing you don't want to see brought to your attention?
facts, truth, reality, right? That's not what you want. You want to live in your own little fairy world where everything is good and you win the Super Bowl every year. As soon as somebody wanders up to you and you goes, yeah, but what about this bad thing that just like bursts your bubble of, you know, lunacy, and you have to live with the rest of us in the real world. They don't want that. So these two things are connected is what I'm saying. But the point I was making is those guys are very, very optimistic and, you know, deluded. And yet they are suggesting that the quarterback play has not been good in Pittsburgh camp so far.
I love tweeting out and asking who's getting all the hype in camp. Sometimes I miss it. I like when people bring it to me, you know. So everybody's like, oh, Brandon Ayuk and, you know, Romeo Dubs and all these guys. And then somebody did send me, not Mitch Trubisky, and then the clip. And by the way, my PSA again today, there was a headline last training camp about how Joe Burrow's interceptions were terrible and all this stuff, but the actual report wasn't that bad. And I think the world would be a better place if nobody read the headline.
Well, you need at this point,
if everybody skipped the headline and just read the content.
I mean, at this point, you have to read the content to make sure that the headline in any way represents what the content is.
Yes. So the Bengals example last year was like, oh yeah, Joe Burrow's trying some things and some things aren't going well. Like, it wasn't as bad as the headline seemed. This one is the headline, Mitchell Trubisky really hasn't been sharp, which really doesn't do justice to the actual content that said they're like 0 for 16 taking shots at the end zone from the 2 and he's 3 of 20 on reps and 0 for 4 with an interception during team period with back-to-back overthrows. It's like... Yeah. Like, if you said Mitch Trubisky's been trash, that probably sums up the actual content. All I'm saying is don't read any more headlines, listeners and viewers of the PFF NFL podcast.
The one small piece of defense I will offer to the quarterbacks in Pittsburgh right now is the Steelers training camp is different from pretty much every other training camp in the NFL. They have pads on a lot. They hit a lot. They tackle a lot. They practice as if they're playing games next week, right? Most teams, like you'll go to training camp and you'll spend a long time before you see pads anywhere near the thing, right? And you certainly won't see like hitting and tackling and stuff. The Steelers do it differently, and the ways they do it differently don't help quarterbacks, right? When guys are getting lit up and guys are getting hit and there's actual contact and physicality, it's harder for offense and it's harder for quarterbacks. So if you want to cling on to a crumb of, you know, delusion and optimism, that's your crumb. It's like, look, those guys have a harder job right now than the other 31 training camps where there aren't pads and people aren't getting hit and lit up. Like, they have a more difficult task.
On the optimistic side, I do like the receivers.
Yeah.
I do like Deontay Johnson, Chase Claypool, for whatever he's going to bring to the table. I feel like he's going to get phased out, though, with George Pickens coming in. We'll see. Your boy Calvin Austin. Deontay Johnson is talking about making the big boy money at wide receiver. I get this question on from the Pittsburgh radio people every week. Is Deontay Johnson worth the $20 million plus? I love Deontay Johnson. I would have a tough time paying him the $20 million. I have a tough time putting him in Keenan Allen, Mike Williams, or better range. He might be on the cusp. I just don't know if he wins at all levels enough to be that guy.
I think he might deserve it, but Pittsburgh of all teams have to be looking at this and saying, particularly like if both George Pickens and Calvin Austin are like real players that can part of this offense, they're looking at this and saying, I mean, we don't need to pay Deontay Johnson that kind of money. So
you could also, like, if you're the Steelers, if you're the Patriots and you're like, we don't really have a history of drafting receivers and developing them. The Steelers do.
That's what I'm saying.
How much do you trust your history of finding the next guy instead of paying somebody?
That's what I mean. Like, if you're the Patriots and you finally struck on a wide receiver and he wants his money, you're kind of like, what are the chances we're going to do that again? If you're Pittsburgh, again, particularly if you'd hit on both Pickens and Calvin Austin, you're looking at this and saying, we can roll into any draft, throw a dart at a board and pick a wide receiver that's that good. Like, we don't need to pay him this money.
The offensive line wasn't great last year. I think, you know, they were protected by Big Ben and the quick passing game. I think they were limited in what they could do. I don't know. That'll be interesting, right? Because whether it's Trubisky or Kenny Pickett, both guys, or Mason Rudolph, they all hold the ball a lot longer than Big Ben did. And Dan Moore was below average as a starting left tackle as a rookie. He had a core four at the right tackle spot who they just re-upped. I don't think he's a great pass blocker either. I do like Kevin Dotson. Mason Cole's probably an upgrade. James Daniels, we'll see if Kendrick Green fits in there. They should be like a little bit better on the offensive line. I just don't know if we'll see it because we won't have Big Ben throwing the ball 2 feet over and over and over again to protect them.
Yeah. I think it's very difficult to overstate just how much harder the Pittsburgh offensive line's job is going to be this season. Going from Ben Roethlisberger, who's getting rid of the ball on average faster than any other quarterback in the NFL by a pretty big margin, to one of Trubisky or Pickett. Let's limit it to that for the moment. Trubisky is at the other end of the scale somewhere. Not egregiously so, but a lot slower on average than Roethlisberger. And Kenny Pickett, if he continues the trend we saw in college, will be historically slow in terms of his average time to throw. And that completely changes the job of the offensive line. And you can see, so we didn't grade the offensive line particularly well last year, but if you look in a couple of different sort of pass protection metrics, they look really good because of what we just talked about. The ball's gone, so they can't give up the kind of pressure that you want. So Pittsburgh gave up, they gave up 25 sacks, the offensive line, which is 10 less than the worst team in the NFL, but also 14 worse than the best. The sacks are a weird thing because they can be decisive immediate losses that essentially no time to throw can mitigate. And that's the type of sack they tended to give up. But they didn't give up much pressure at all because the ball was gone.
2.25 seconds, Big Ben.
So they ranked sixth in terms of total pressures given up and fourth in terms of pass blocking efficiency as an offensive line. But we had them graded like in the 20s or something.
Here's the perspective. I mean, Big Ben's time to throw. Again, this is snap to release or snap to the end of the play if you cross the line of scrimmage. You cross the line of scrimmage as a runner. 2.25 for Big Ben. 2.33 for Tom Brady. And then it jumps up to 2.5 for the number three player, Tua. So 2.5 for Tua, who was third. 2.25 for Roethlisberger. I mean, we're talking, 0.3-second difference in Big Ben versus Tua. That same difference is the difference between Tua and like the 25th. So the difference between Big Ben and the third fastest release is the same difference as the difference between Tua, who's third, and the 25th quarterback. That's how quickly Roethlisberger was getting rid of the ball. And it wasn't because he was playing with great decision. Like when you look at Brady, it's like great decision making. Guys are getting open. He knows where he's going with it. That was not Big Ben last year. He was just getting rid of it or throwing a swing pass on 4th and 10. So it was bad quarterback play last year, but it was quick and protecting the line.
And Pickett was at, I think, 3.1 last year in college. And
yeah, almost a second. I mean, we're talking 3/4 of a second here, which is an eternity.
It almost always gets longer for young quarterbacks going from college to the NFL. Every single one of the first round quarterbacks last year, their time to throw got longer from their last year in college to their first year in the NFL. They get slower. That concept, right, the speed of the game, it's real, and that's one of the ways it shows up is you just slow down because you're not processing as fast as everybody else, so you hesitate. If Pickett gets slower, I genuinely think that might be enough to stop him getting on the field at all. Like if he slows down his process from college to the NFL, which was already at, like if he just maintained the number that he was at last year in college, he would be the slowest average. He would have the slowest average time to throw in the NFL based on last year and most seasons. If he gets slower, obviously you end up off the end of the scale behind an offensive line that isn't very good at pass blocking. That would be genuinely not workable.
Does Mason Rudolph end up being the starter? Because you could see the Steelers. I mean, they signed Mitchell Trubisky to kind of be the bridge starter. But you could easily, I mean, Trubisky's just not accurate. I'm intrigued. I would love to see Trubisky just get one more shot and see if he could rejuvenate things in a place that has done good work under Mike Tomlin, right? I'd like to see that for Trubisky. But there's a chance, like if the training camp reports are true and he's just an inaccurate quarterback, there's a chance Mason Rudolph is just going to look better than him and they're going to say Kenny Pickett's not ready yet and Mason Rudolph is going to be the starter.
So I maintain that we will get 4 games of Trubisky before he plays his way to the bench and they throw in Kenny Pickett.
Okay.
Now, the difference in thinking between now and when I first thought that is now I'm thinking the Pickett might not be ready at all when the 4 games come. What happens if you have 4 games of Trubisky, 2 or 3 games of Pickett, and they're train wrecks? Now what do you do? Do you go back to Trubisky, or is that when Rudolph goes in?
And I keep coming back to the thing I struggled with Kenny Pickett was he was fantastic last year as a fifth-year senior at Pittsburgh, whereas previously he was a grinder, like gonna miss some throws but make them under pressure and, you know, pick up a first down with my legs type of college quarterback. If you described Kenny Pickett last year at this time, it was like, oh, he's a good college quarterback. He's a good college quarterback who's done some nice things for Pittsburgh, and then he had a breakout season. So does he have that same career path in the NFL? Is he going to be a slow starter? I still maintain if you draft a quarterback in the first round, whenever he's ready, he's ready. And Mitchell Trubisky and Mason Rudolph, their performance should not dictate when Kenny Pickett sees the field. Because if he's not ready, he's not ready. So do whatever's best by Pickett if you're the Steelers. I don't know if it's going to be that early in the season, though.
If Tomlin ends up at 500 or better this year, the man deserves Coach of the Year.
Yeah. So Vegas has him at 7.
Yeah.
I think they might be under 7. But Tomlin makes me think they'll find a way.
I don't care what anybody else does this year. If the Steelers win 9 games, which is what you need now to be 500.
They're not that bad of a team, like roster, though.
But Trubisky is going to play his way to the bench in 4 games. If Kenny Pickett averages 3.5 seconds per throw, he's going to last like 2 games before they sit him down, and then they're going to have to turn to Mason Rudolph for half the season. If they get 9 wins out of that, to put him in the Hall of Fame.
I like Drew in the chat, who's usually pretty active. What do you do when you have 3 guys vying to be the 28th best quarterback in the league? It is a challenge. Defensively, T.J. Watt's a stud. Cameron Hayward, right? You've got 2 stars on that. They call it T.J. Watt, a defensive lineman. He's a pass rusher, right?
You're just going to ignore the great Minka Fitzpatrick like that.
Minka is a very good safety. I think he's a good safety that did not have as good of a year last year as people think. So we'll continue to... He had a 57 grade last year. Nobody likes that. Nobody, because he makes some flash plays, but I don't know. He has some bad plays that people don't catch on to. I don't know what to say. Mink is a good player. I don't think he had a good season last year overall. We've answered the question about Levi Wallace and Akilah Witherspoon. You know, 2 guys I would want to have on my team. I think they're good, solid players, so they could have a decent enough secondary. I think one of our bets that has come through is about the Steelers secondary. We'll see if we take it. They're trying to rejuvenate Miles Jack. Weird career for Jack, where he looked like one of the best young linebackers. He's had also disastrous seasons where he's graded horribly next to a guy, Devin Bush, who's underachieved as a first rounder too, and they declined his fifth year option. There's a lot of potential on this defense. There's a lot of what ifs. If Devin Bush plays better, if Miles Jack plays better than he had, if Alex Highsmith becomes the edge rusher opposite T.J. Watt that he's shown flashes of at other times in his career. Stephon Tuitt retires. They bring in Larry Ogunjobi. I just want to say with Ogunjobi, the Bengals kind of liked him. The Bears wanted to bring him in. They couldn't. We have him with a 47 grade last year and not great in Cincinnati. I think there's a little disconnect between our take on Ogunjobi and the rest of the league, so that'll be intriguing to see how he fits in there as well.
So doesn't it feel like that linebacker group from the Steelers would be amazing like 10 years ago? Like before offenses evolved and just put linebackers in a blender every single play.
Devin Bush, Miles Jack.
Yeah, lined up a decade ago or like back in 2005 or something, and that was your inside linebacker duo was Devin Bush and Miles Jack, those guys would just lay waste to offenses. Now
it's just the idea of them again. Because Bush is like... Look, if Bush is a good blitzer, you know, they put a lot on, you mentioned this a lot, they put a lot on the plate of a linebacker in coverage in that scheme. If Bush can do a little bit more, maybe blitzing, and Miles Jack takes more of the coverage responsibility, I don't know. It's just Jack should play better than he was last year because he's got a better track record than that. He's just been really inconsistent. So a lot of potential on the Steelers defense.
Yeah, but all of a sudden it's potential as opposed to like this is the best defense in the NFL or one of the top defenses in the NFL that can carry the burden from an offense not firing the way it used to. Now you don't expect the offense to be very good because, you know, quarterback play will probably be bad. We like the wide receivers, but the offensive line might be prohibitive. Najee Harris isn't going to be able to carry it because the offensive line stinks. All of a sudden you just don't think the offense will be very good. Now you actually need the defense to carry the load, and you look at it and you say, well, Hayward's good. T.J. Watt's good. Minka, you know, is good but not amazing most of the time. That linebacker group has talent. Like, it's like, yeah, there's a way it could happen, but they honestly really all need to hit the high end of that.
I'm looking at – I mean, they were terrible against the run last year, but I'm looking at, like, the three-year sample, looking at WAR. If the players like Minka and Levi Wallace and Akilah Witherspoon and Cameron Sutton, those corners, if they play to what they've done from, like, a three-year sample standpoint, it's a good, solid defense. But last year they all played probably below their level. So, again, there's a lot of potential there in Pittsburgh. So you're going over or under the seven here?
I have to go under, but the Tomlin thing is crazy.
Yeah, I think I have to go under, too. We're doubting the Steelers again for, like, the third straight year. Have we been wrong? I don't know.
We certainly weren't wrong when we were criticizing the Roethlisberger thing.
We weren't wrong when we said they were the worst 11-0 team in history.
Yeah,
because then they lost, like, the next five games.
Yeah, probably not. There's a lot of, you know, as I say, there's... See, the problem is the fan base is they read the delusional beat writers. You know?
Yeah.
It's going to sway them. Got to evaluate your source.
Like, I appreciate beat writers instilling confidence.
Really?
I don't mind. I mean, yeah, I don't mind them.
Isn't their job just to, like, report what happened and tell you what the story is?
No. I think their job is to get people to read and listen to them.
Yeah.
That's what they're paid to do.
On the other
hand, there's different strategies in how to do that. You're not like this investigative reporter being like...
No, but you are a journalist. Like,
kind of.
Like, your job is to portray facts, not just make things up. Because otherwise you could do that without going anywhere near the team.
I'm not saying make things up. I'm saying you could focus on the positives. As a beat writer, I'm talking about as a beat writer, I don't hate that as a concept. I think, but when you push back against facts, right, like... The Steelers might be the worst 11-0 team. It's like, no, they're going to the Super Bowl, Big Ben's MVP and stuff. Like, okay, now you're pushing back against facts. So
you don't see the inevitability, though, of one approach leading to the other.
I don't mind getting a fan base to feel better about their team, especially here in training camp, because we're here to tear you down with facts. All right, other people do that.
I'm just saying that it feels to me like the job of a guy who's a reporter that goes to camp is to tell you what happened in camp. And if you're only telling you... Like, if you're just saying everything was great in camp today, everybody was amazing. Enjoy.
Do you understand the world we live in now, Sam?
I'm just saying
there's
that's
no
like,
truth, there's only your truth.
That
man.
Isn't doing your job.
There's only whatever truth you believe.
Because your job is to report what happened, not to invent a
your
new
job
reality.
Is to report the truth of the people that want to hear their truth. That's it, supposedly. I don't actually believe that. All right, let's move on to the NFC North. Starts with the Chicago Bears.
Oh, dear.
All right. I may have missed something along the way, but has there been one positive piece of news coming out of Bears camp yet? Speaking of negativity.
Not really. And they signed, you know, Riley Reiff. That can't hurt.
Moved him to right tackle. It sounds like the offense is struggling.
But I was – so a Bears radio host messaged me. He was like, who from PFF should we get to come on and talk about Braxton Jones? Because it sounds like he's going to be the starting left tackle. Now, for anyone that doesn't know, Braxton Jones was a fifth-round pick out of Southern Utah this year and is apparently going to be the starting left tackle for the Chicago Bears.
I'm going to PFF IQ. I'll give you everything you need to know.
Whilst they shop their second-round right tackle pick from last season.
Braxton Jones did have a 93.9 grade last year at Southern Utah in the FCS.
Oh, yeah. Tevin Jenkins. So whilst Tevin Jenkins is being sort of actively shopped around... I mean, look, Braxton Jones may end up being an amazing player, but generally speaking, fifth-round picks from Southern Utah don't come in start day
you
one.
You
could
see the long play here.
Look great.
Developing offensive linemen and...
You could see the long play, but all this is like, usually this happens without a quarterback in the building. Usually the long play, the like, hey, this is the year we suffer through to get to the promised land on the other side. Usually that happens
we're going
to
get
like,
into this again. They hate Justin Fields.
Usually that happens with like Ryan Fitzpatrick at starter, you know? It's like, hey, Ryan, you know the score. You've been here before. Sorry. You know? But I hear on the upside, here's a few million dollars you're going to make for doing this. Thanks.
Ryan Pohl stepped into a situation with no cap flexibility and with no draft capital.
Right.
What would you have done? What would you have done?
But there's still there. You still don't have to trade away Tevin Jenkins after a year.
Like, oh, I mean, there's something off the field happening there. His back injury, and they don't think he's the guy.
Or they've just decided that, like, we are literally stripping this thing for parts, and we don't care what it leaves us with, because next year is the important thing.
I think that's more of like a there's a thing happening with Tevin Jenkins. Not like, oh, we didn't draft him. We only want our draft picks. Okay. Tevin Jenkins is a good player. Like some, yeah. If I'm a team and you're going to get, you can give up like a fourth round pick for last year's second round pick, Tevin Jenkins, I'm doing that. If I'm the Chargers, the Raiders, I mean, there's so many teams I would go get Tevin Jenkins.
But it also kind of fits in with the MO so far, which has been anything that's worth anything on this roster is being sold off for whatever they can get for it.
I think that because they have to, because they need cap flexibility.
I'm honestly
because
surprised
they need talent.
At this point that they haven't put Justin Fields on the trade block.
Why not? Blow the whole thing up. It does look like the non-quarterback offensive roster looks like the worst in the NFL.
Yes. This is a terrible roster, top to bottom.
I like Darnell Mooney a lot. The receivers they brought in, Equanimeous St. Brown, Byron Pringle, N'Keal Harry. I mean, they've all been pretty much number fours across, you know, in their respective spots with, you know, uneven results, we'll say. Yeah. Velus Jones as an aging receiver comes in.
I really
they don't
like
have a ton of
Velus
great
Jones,
targets here.
But he's 28 years old.
Right. Do you like him because he's...
Whatever he is, 26, 20...
He's a legit 25, I believe.
Let's see. So I really liked Velus Jones, but he's old and...
He's 25.
Only broke out after, you know, 6 years at college. And he has to be like your number one now, or number two behind Darnell Mooney. So it's just a lot to ask, and I don't know.
I liked their first two draft picks, but because they were on the defensive side of the ball, people questioned their love for Justin Fields. I will stick by, like, you don't just draft offensive players just because you have Justin Fields. You got to trust the board. Kyler Gordon comes in at corner. You know I love Jaquan Brisker at safety. I think both of those guys do upgrade the secondary.
Just cut to the bottom line. What's the over-under and how many under are we going?
All right. Bears. It's not in order over here. 6.5.
Under. Hammer the under.
I'd go under
six
as well.
6.5?
I mean, the question is, though, you've got two games against the Lions, even if they're going to be better. I mean, you're playing in the NFC North. The NFC teams all have, like, if you put the Bears in the AFC North, it's probably 3.5. Right? I mean, it's that distinctive a difference, isn't it?
I don't know.
6.5 down to 3.5 if you put them in an AFC division.
I mean, if you put them in the AFC North or West, you would expect them to lose every single one of those division games.
Yeah.
But I don't know that's untrue in the NFC North either. Maybe you get lucky against the Lions or the Vikings once, but both those teams should be heavy favorites against the Bears both times.
Yeah, it's just not a good looking roster anywhere. Anywhere. I got nothing else.
No.
I just think they've been put high level. 2018, they had an excellent roster.
Yeah.
And literally every single year it got worse. Mm-hmm. Offensive line deteriorated. Defense absolutely deteriorated.
I really like Khalil Herbert, but he might look terrible because they have a terrible offensive line in front of him.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this. Bringing in Michael Schofield to potentially play guard, bringing in Riley Reiff to play right tackle. Cody Whitehair is good at left guard. 3/5 of the offensive line is average, right? You have questions at center, whether it's Sam Mustipha or Lucas Patrick. You have, I mean, it's a huge question at left tackle with a 5th-round FCS player in Braxton Jones. It's a huge question mark if he's going to be the starter. So it could be a disaster up front, but they might be 3/5 could be okay.
Have you seen the other quarterbacks on the roster?
Yeah. Trevor Siemian, Nathan Peterman. Mm. Solid. Say something nice about the Bears.
I did. I said I like Khalil Herbert.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And then I told you that it wouldn't matter because the offensive line's not good enough to make him look any good.
We don't know about Roquan Smith and his B-Doo, you know, if they're going to re-sign him. So what do you do with Justin Fields here and the evaluation?
I feel sorry for him. Genuinely, I think the Bears are going to stink this year. I think they're going to be in the running for the number one overall pick. And I think there's almost no way that Justin Fields can do anything to dissuade you from taking a quarterback with that pick next year. So you're going to end up in a situation where Fields has not been fairly evaluated. And unless Fields pulls miracles and looks amazing this year, despite everything around him, I don't see how you can come to the conclusion that, oh, we pass on the quarterback. Or we trade out of number one or number two because we have Justin Fields. I don't think you could do that if you're Ryan Poles. So you end up...
I mean, if he truly does elevate this group, If at the end, I mean, I don't think you're going to – the problem with Fields, too, if we're going to talk about QBs holding the ball, he does a lot. That was the biggest issue coming out.
But like, how good would he need to be for you to pass on that pick next year if you're picking in the top three and you have a shot of one of those top?
I think if he's as good as he was last year, there's still
you think you'd pass on him based off a repeat of last year's performance.
Last year's performance was okay. There were some games that were absolute train wreck disasters. There was other games, the Steelers game, and there's games where it's like, all right, I see the big time throws, I see some of the stuff that we really liked coming out. If there's enough of that hope, even if it's a little inconsistent, I think you could still roll with Fields because you could say, well, he's only throwing to Darnell Mooney and like Cole Kmet. Like, he doesn't have anybody to throw to. He's got an offensive line that's not good. And we know if Fields is going to be successful, he probably needs more pass protection than others, right? Because he's not going to be the guy that gets rid of the ball quickly and protects the line. It's just not his game. Then you have to see, how does the offense actually play to his strengths? For all the criticism that Matt Nagy got last year, and you never roll him out, and you never do all these things for Justin Fields, do they actually do more favorable things offensively to help him? So,
I mean, if he repeated last year in terms
they're moving
of performance,
on?
There's not a chance in hell they would not draft a quarterback if they're picking, in the top two.
All right. So we're going under? I'm going under on the Bears.
Yes.
6.5. Under 6.5. Detroit Lions coming up now. They next? Yeah. Lions, we got the Packers. We got three more teams to discuss. Mm-hmm. What do the Lions have? They're over under 6.5 as well.
Yeah.
Things feel better about the – do we feel better about the Lions and the Bears? I know our friend Eric Eager does.
I think you have to at this point. I mean, there's things to work with on the Detroit roster. I like what the Bears have done. Or not the Bears, the Lions. I like what the Lions have done a lot. Oh, there you go. There's the doctor.
That was just upstairs earlier today.
I like what the Lions have done. Now, look, Eric has been pushing them as a bet, an over bet for the win total for a while. And a big part of that is based off their schedule, which is about as easy as it gets. So that's huge in terms of them winning or losing games. In terms of them actually being dramatically better, I love the rebuild project that they've undertaken, but now the players that you added, with a sort of long-term view in mind of, hey, these guys need a couple of years of play before we get the good stuff out of them, you need to start seeing some of that for you to be confident that those guys are still part of the plan, right? So in particular, the defensive tackles that they drafted last year, Levi and Wuzurike, Alim McNeil, those guys need to be a lot better this year for you to still be confident that they're the solution. Otherwise, now you have a hole inside that you still need to fill. So, and a guy like Jeffrey Okuda hasn't been playing well, has had injury. Like, what do you do with Okuda going forward, and cornerback generally? So I think I love what they've done. I think they've made a lot of really smart decisions, added a lot of players that I liked. But now you need to see the development from some of them in order for you to be assured that you are still on the right track.
I try not to get too caught up in that, because last year at this time, I felt similar about, say, the Jets, right? Like, the Jets had Robert Saleh coming in, thought they made some moves on the offensive line. It looked like they improved in a lot of key areas, and they were still a pretty bad football team last year. So are the Lions similar? Well, you could look at their offensive line. I don't know where we ranked them before the season, but top five caliber offensive line if everybody's healthy. We'll see when Jameson Williams gets to see the field, but Amon-Ra St. Brown was a breakout star last year as a rookie. Bring in DJ Chark. They're better at receiver. They're probably better defensively, but they're starting from such a low place, right? Like, last year at this time, we're like, they have nothing. What are they going to have? You want to see a random rookie step up. You got it. Amon-Ra St. Brown, right? So they're better than they were a year ago at this time, but how much is just Dan Campbell comes in, expectations are so low, and they exceeded those low expectations. They played some tough games. They played teams down to the wire. They won some games that they shouldn't have won. I mean, that's all you could expect from a year one coach, but how does that translate into year two? Is Dan Campbell the next coach that's always going to maximize his roster? I think that's where part of the optimism comes in from the Lions. Jared Goff has to play better. He had a 60 grade last year. There were times he just... Even Dan Campbell saying, man, throw the ball down the field. Let's go. Let's see if they can extract that out of Goff a little bit more this year. Maybe with the line, them staying healthy, it helps.
Yeah. I like what they've done. I think adding those receivers has been a big part of this year's offseason project. Jameson Williams could be spectacular. It might take him a little while to get going with that injury, but DJ Chark is definitely the kind of gamble that I like taking at wide receiver. You know, short-term deal for not a ton of money, but a guy that has shown big play potential. Amon-Ra St. Brown is the solid slot chain-moving option there. TJ Hawkinson's a good player at tight end. That offensive line should be a really good unit, getting Frank Ragnow back in particular. The offense should be pretty reasonable. A lot is on Jared Goff to show how good he can be. And again, remember, he's a guy where the box score numbers are a lot better than how he was actually playing. So if you're just looking at like touchdown interception ratio, you might be convinced that Jared Goff played pretty well last year. Jared Goff did not play pretty well last year, and they could use him playing a lot better this year. But for me, the big question is the players on that defense that they've added, how much better do they start to perform? So Aiden Hutchinson, obviously coming in as a rookie, is big. I actually like the depth that they've got now as a pass rusher generally, with Aquaras, with Josh Pascal, a rookie as well, with Charles Harris, who had breakout late last year. Like that all of a sudden is a group, like a platoon of pass rushers that should be pretty useful. But the big question is those interior guys, because if you don't get decent play from those guys, you're going to end up looking a lot like the Chargers did last year, where it's just not enough.
It's also tough. You've got a guy like Jeffrey Okuda, a couple years removed from being the number three overall pick. Is he even going to be a starter at this point? He's dealt with injuries, and when he's been healthy, just has not been good. I mean, that's production-wise, he's been one of the more disappointing corners to be drafted in the top 10 in a while. You know, those are the types of things where there's just still holes on that defense unless some other guys step up. But I'm with you. I like some of the moves they're making. I can't wait to see what Aiden Hutchinson does. I mean, him versus Trayvon Walker.
Yeah.
You know, comparing their careers will always be a thing, just to see if the Jags made the right move and if the Lions truly did benefit as much as we thought by getting Hutchinson at two. I like the line. I keep saying the offensive line, the way where they've been there. And I think in the rebuild here, Sam, maybe a year from now they're looking at quarterback. Eventually they're looking at adding some more playmakers. I think the big question for me this year is the defensive line. The guys you mentioned, Owusu-Rike, Alim McNeil, if those guys can start to develop, right? They need these recent draft picks to show that they're at least average to good players. If they do that, yeah, the Lions, they're going to be another tough out this year. 6.5, though? What was Eric betting? Was he betting something much lower than that earlier this offseason that he was so optimistic?
No, he's liked, I think, 6.5. He liked a lot. I think he's even liked over 7.5 if you get the right money on it. So his big thing is the schedule. Like, they have a really, really beneficial schedule.
Yeah. I mean, if Goff is a 60 again, it was his worst grade since his rookie year. If Goff is a 60, it's going to be a challenge. So
Lions schedule. We've got the Eagles, the Commanders, the Vikings, the Seahawks, the Patriots, the Cowboys, the Dolphins, the Packers, the Bears, the Giants, the Bills. That's not easy, obviously. The Jags, Vikings again, the Jets, the Panthers, Bears again, Packers again. So when you consider that we think the Bears are bad, you know, Carolina could easily be bad. The Jets shouldn't be good. Jags shouldn't be good. There aren't that many good teams on this list.
That's why the NFC teams have higher total. I mean, that's why the Bears are where they are as well at 6.5. So you're gonna go over here?
Yeah.
For the Lions?
Give them 7 wins.
Are they in the playoffs in 23?
I mean, it depends. Depends.
That should have been one of your bold takes. Just look forward. 2023.
Another year.
Yeah. Nobody will remember either way.
True.
But you'll instill optimism in Lions fans. I still might lean under, despite what... I mean, I trust Eric and his Numbers.
The Numbers.
Yeah.
He's really high on Washington this year, which means I'm now feeling like...
The opposite of last year.
Yeah, and I'm lower on them this year than last year. I feel like me and him with Washington is like an elaborate shell game where I keep picking the cup with nothing in it.
But that's what... That really is what the gambling market is, right? It's feeding off of perception.
Sure.
And it's easy to get caught up in the most recent thing that you saw, whereas the numbers tend to keep you on point to not overweigh the most recent thing that you saw. Me, the most recent thing I saw was the Lions not winning a ton of games, and I'm feeling like they might do that again. I'll take under just for now. I trust Eric, though. Under for the Bears and the Lions, even though the schedules say, hey, they could do it. All right, Green Bay Packers. What's going to happen with the Packers? Romeo Dubs, man. Is he going to the Hall of Fame?
You know when you sort of have a feeling about something, but you don't want to go too out there with your take in case you look like Max Kellerman?
Yeah.
It's like Tom Brady's going to be a bum next year.
You would never make such an outlandish statement about Tom Brady.
Well, I certainly would never couch it in those kind of idiotic terms because you're going to look like a moron, right? I look like a moron when I made a particularly or a perfectly fair or nuanced argument based off data. I still look like an idiot. So I guess that's – if you follow that logic, you might as well couch it in idiotic terms because it doesn't make a difference.
Yeah.
But right from the draft, I liked the idea that Romeo Dubs might be the player from this – group. Like, he would be a better chance of succeeding year one than Christian Watson and might actually end up being like this team's number one receiver. I don't know how strong I said that on the podcast, and I've been trying to think like how close to that did I actually articulate out loud, and how much did I just be like, hey, Romeo Dubs a nice player, because now he's like torching training camp and looks amazing and everybody's talking him up, and it's like, god damn it, if I had that on record I'd look smart.
It's tough to quantify torching training camp too, right? Does that legitimately mean he's going to be a number one?
Yeah.
Or is it, again, sometimes the hype is like a year early?
Well, it's prior take reinforcement season, right? So for me, it's like I kind of had that inkling all the way along, and it's now being borne out in training camp. Now I just need to hope it carries into the regular season, but whatever. I do think it's potentially significant that Romeo Dubs looks good, because there is a world where he looks a lot better than his draft spot did. And if he, we've talked before, there's a good record recently of a lot of wide receivers coming into the NFL and having immediate success and being productive and being quality starting caliber players. And they haven't always been first rounders. They've been guys lower down the draft where we just missed. Dubs could be that guy. And if he is, that's potentially transformative for a wide receiver group that on paper looks bad.
Packers have the same easy-ish schedule. Of course, they'll play a first-place schedule compared to like the Bears and the Lions, but they play the AFC East. They play their own division, so they got to play the Lions twice and the Bears twice. So the Packers over-under is 11. But Packers fans here, I mean, they've had the number one seed the last couple of years. It is Super Bowl or bust again, right? Super Bowl or bust in Green Bay. Are they good enough to win the Super Bowl?
Not unless, somebody like Romeo Dubs shows up and is completely different. Or
could they just win in a different way, though? Could they win with defense? Can they win with a different
style?
No, I
don't think they can. That's what I'm saying. I think that wide receiver group, unless it looks different, and by that I mean either Romeo Dubs shows up and is a different player than people thought he was, continues this thing throughout the season, or they snag like an Odell Beckham midway through the year and OBJ comes in and changes things late in the season. They need to do something that would transform that wide receiver group. If they don't, I just don't believe you can win a Super Bowl with that group right now. I don't want to hear this like, oh, well, look at when Tom Brady won it with, whoever. Like, right now, the year 2022, with the current group of NFL teams, I don't believe you can win a Super Bowl with this group as it looks on paper.
There's a lot of good NFL teams that are loaded at playmaker.
And the game has changed. It's different to when Tom Brady first got his way into the starting lineup, and it's a different game.
The other guys they're hoping that can step up, Sammy Watkins, maybe Amari Rodgers in year two, Alan Lazard, of course, who Aaron Rodgers puts in the Hall of Fame, Randall Cobb, his buddy, Christian Watson. I don't think he's seen time in camp yet, so he's probably going to start from behind. But
They got your guy as well.
Who's my guy?
Samori Toure.
Yeah, Toure could be the guy. Look at that. Great depth there. So I think it's a weird thing to say, because they lost. The Packers lost because their offense was terrible, basically. Special teams was terrible, but the offense was terrible in a night game in Green Bay where they scored 10 points at home, and they had Devontae Adams and they had Aaron Rodgers, and they still were terrible. So you could say, well, they would need to have other things to win anyway, right? They had Devontae Adams and they still had a bad offense. On the other hand, it's like, well, they got worse at receiver. How are they going to do better in that next situation? How are they going to do better the next time in the playoffs?
I mean,
it doesn't look great on paper unless Dubs really – I mean, he doesn't have to be Devontae Adams, but if he's a high-level rookie starter, that's huge for the Packers here.
Huge, absolutely. I mean, you have a fascinating case study in how much can Aaron Rodgers elevate the play of a group that doesn't look good versus how much does a group that's bad drag down Aaron Rodgers?
Or the Packers, like if Deontay Johnson was a third rounder and almost immediately it's like, okay, this guy can make an impact right away. But if Dubs is Deontay Johnson level, a guy that the Steelers are talking about right now, 3 years later, talking about paying him $20 million a year, like Dubs could be that guy. I don't know. Is he that good? But if he is right away, he's like a 90 catch guy for the Packers, right? Are we jumping too far ahead here in hype?
No, look, we don't know yet, right? There are guys that look great in training camp every year and they don't carry it into the regular season. But the players that do immediately overperform their draft status, you know, where you look at them and you say, okay, we just got that wrong. He's a better player. And Deontay Johnson is a great example. Those guys tend to look good immediately, right? We don't like stumble into them in week three and then it's like, oh, look, we found this guy here. It's like, no, that guy was lighting it up in training camp, lighting it up in preseason, lighting it up in the regular season. We just missed when it came to draft time. Dubs has one tick, you know, it's just ticking boxes. He's ticked the first one, which is immediately he looks like a better player in training camp. Now, do we see that carry over as time goes? It's entirely possible. Like I said, I had this inkling all along that Dubs was a better player than that and was a really nice pickup for Green Bay, but now we need to see if that works. But the downside of this is the last time we saw Rodgers with a receiving group this bad on paper was the worst PFF grade of his career by a pretty healthy margin. And the 2 years either side of that were 90 grades.
Yeah, and here's the reality of it. If Devontae Adams was still on this roster, we would say they need Romeo Dubs to be as good as the hype is in camp because they need a compliment to Devontae Adams. And it takes pressure off Alan Lazard. And maybe Christian Watson, when he's healthy, can just run the Valdes-Scantling deep routes, right?
And look, the other
thing... You need that even if Devontae Adams was there.
The other thing here is, remember the last run of Tom Brady in New England where that receiving core got so bad that it made the offensive line look worse as well. Green Bay's offensive line all of a sudden doesn't look as strong as it used to. And, you know, David Bakhtiari is still working his way back from injury, still not necessarily 100%. Elton Jenkins should be a good starter at right tackle. He's been a good starter pretty much everywhere. But the interior trio is not particularly strong. So I wouldn't have any concerns really about the offensive line. If you had a great receiving core and Aaron Rodgers at quarterback, they'd figure it out and they'd be fine. They always have. But if that receiving core is as bad as it could be, that starts to push into the Patriots with Tom Brady, where all of a sudden we're asking, like, what the hell's happened to the offensive line when the answer was the receiving core, counterintuitively. Because that group was so bad that Brady had to hold the ball longer. Nobody was open. You're inviting more pressure. You're playing worse under pressure, which makes it look worse because there's still nobody open when you're holding onto the ball that long. All of that could happen this year for Green Bay if the receiving core doesn't look better than it looks on paper.
Are they going to run the ball more? There was a point where I was buying into having Aaron Jones and then A.J. Dillon and his 250 pounds just running people over was going to be good for them in the long run. Because they, you know, you'd have games where you could rely on the run game at times, but because you were making the defense do different things, right? We've got this finesse, horizontal passing game, and then, oh, by the way, go tackle A.J. Dillon, 250 pounds. I liked that combination. I wonder if they end up relying on that 1-2 punch a little bit more with some of the indecision here.
I think you're going to see a lot more of Aaron Jones as a receiver. Like,
oh, yeah, I mean, they
actually
split him
routes.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, out of the backfield type of thing. I think they're going to lean on him quite a bit. I also think
Matt LaFleur's done a good job of that, right?
Yeah.
Playing to players' skill sets and using motion and kind of, you know, he rejuvenated Aaron Rodgers' career. Let's be serious here. He rejuvenated Rodgers' career, got him playing at a higher level, got him producing at a level similar to early in his career, and it's in part by playing to the strengths of his receiving core.
My only question with the, like, do they run the ball more thing is just, there's only so far you can take that. Like,
sure.
They were 13th, I think, in terms of like run rate last year. I mean, even if they moved that to like third, you know, they jumped it up 10 spots. I mean, how much is that offsetting the fact that your receiving core is not great?
Well, you're hoping the question that we've posed this offseason, is this the best defense Aaron Rodgers has had since 2010 when they won the Super Bowl? They had a good defense. is this the best one? They made it through all of last year without David Bakhtiari at left tackle, but probably more importantly, without Jair Alexander for a big chunk of time at cornerback. Now you have Jair. You got a career year out of Rasul Douglas. You got a solid year out of rookie Eric Stokes last year. That is a solid trio of corners. Darnell Savage, Adrian Amos. We talked about the Ravens way back earlier on the show. I mean, this is competing for one of the best secondaries, if not the best in the NFL.
Yeah. I mean, I asked this question a year ago with different players, but it's you kind of repeat it again, which is Rasul Douglas career year, Rashawn Gary career year, Devondre Campbell career year. What happens to those three players this year? Can they all back it up? Because those are important players, and if they don't, that changes things. Devondre Campbell in particular, like that guy was an all-pro with no evidence prior to that that he was even that was even within his range of possible outcomes. He had like a pretty consistent range of like 55 grades every year in two different teams, and then shows up in Green Bay and he's an all-pro linebacker. Like, A, what the hell? And B, now you've re-signed him to five-year, $50 million contract. Does that happen again, or do we go back to like old Devondre Campbell?
Fair question.
Rashawn Gary, I think, should be fine. Like, he's looked phenomenal last. He looked phenomenal last season. He was getting better as the year wore on. I would be reasonably confident that Rashawn Gary is just that damn good right now, and he's an immediate like-for-like replacement, essentially, for Za'Darius Smith, who was their number one pass rusher, albeit not last year when he was hurt. The Rasul Douglas thing, like, we know cornerback play is really volatile. Is he going to have anything like the year we just saw from him? Like, we put that down to, oh, he's in a better scheme now, more suits his talents, and that's why he got all the interceptions. Yeah. Alternatively, that just happens sometimes.
He didn't have the 11 interceptions Trayvon Diggs had, but we're talking about an interception-driven career year for Rasul Douglas.
Now,
right?
I care less about that because I think Eric Stokes will be better this year. Like, he was reasonable as a rookie, but I was more sort of what impressed me about his rookie season was, A, it was surprising. So it was sort of, it's like that perception thing, right? Your starting point. I didn't expect much from Eric Stokes, or what I saw was exceeded expectations. But also, the stuff that he did well, I think, spoke to like, okay, you're going to be good in the future. You know, like, you're not amazing right now, but I really like what you're going to be.
I love when our podcast becomes outdated almost immediately. So two pieces of breaking news. First, Rasul Douglas just now jumped an out route for to Randall Cobb for an interception. Okay. Just jumped it. So an interception for Rasul Douglas. No regression happening this season.
Okay.
Secondly, Deontay Johnson has signed a contract. Okay. Mike Garofolo, I don't know if he's first on it, but he's reporting it. 2 years, $36.71 million. So 2 years, about $18 million per year for Deontay Johnson. That seems like a reasonable range.
It seems like a solid compromise, to be honest. Steelers don't have to go where they don't want to go financially, and Deontay Johnson gets some kind of,
it's a 2-year extension. I think he's got, what, one or two more years?
Yeah, he gets some kind of healthy pay rise whilst also, you know, being able to hit the free agent market
somewhat soon.
Prime.
Yeah.
Fair deal all around.
So if we were talking about Deontay Johnson looking for $20 million earlier in the podcast, just ignore that. He just signed 2 years.
We were right, though. They didn't give him 20.
They didn't give him 20. I wouldn't do it either.
Yeah.
Just me and the Steelers. Lockstep at all times.
So anyway, I just think it's important for Green Bay to understand that a lot of their important players last year had career years, and anytime you're sort of projecting what the next year is going to look like, you generally expect regression from career years, right? Just by their nature. They're career years for a reason. They're outliers. You're not expecting somebody to just back up year after year after year of career seasons unless their name is Aaron Donald. So Green Bay is likely to have to contend with some regression from important players, but I like the idea that Eric Stokes can offset a lot of that. Getting Jair Alexander back will offset a lot of that. I think generally they have gotten better.
Sounds like David Bakhtiari at tackle too, still dealing with
that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
Some issues.
So that offensive line has some real concerns.
I'm just trying to think of the, because last year at this time we're like, hey, they had like three superstars and that's it. You know, and they needed other people to step up. They had other people step up last year, but now it's like, can they maintain that?
That's the freaky thing is, a year ago I was asking the same question. I was saying that Aaron Rodgers coming off a career year, Devontae Adams coming off a career year, David Bakhtiari coming off a career year, and Jair Alexander coming off a career year. Like, four of your most important players all had the best seasons of their career. And Za'Darius Smith, so five. Five guys, three of those guys didn't play last year, effectively, all season. Like, you lost Jair Alexander for almost the whole year, Za'Darius Smith and David Bakhtiari. So they didn't just regress. They were removed from the lineup, and it didn't make any difference.
All right. Over or under for the Packers this year, 11 wins.
Over. 12-win team, but it's not going to take them to a Super Bowl.
What happens with Rodgers at the end of the year? I'll go over the 11 as well. What happens with Rodgers at the end of the year? Is this it for him?
No, he's still there. We're fine.
All right. So no Super Bowl this year for the Packers?
No.
Will there be a Super Bowl for the Minnesota Vikings?
No.
They're the last team we're going to cover here.
Yeah.
Is that everybody? We cover everybody?
Hopefully.
Another smooth, quick, efficient podcast. Let's do 12 to 15 minutes on the Vikings, Sam. Let's go.
Well, don't forget the bets we got to cover at the end.
Oh, we got the bets too. I told you not to do it on a preview show, man. We save these things. I told you.
No, listen, you do the Vikings because I'm going to get whinged at for saying the same thing over and over and over again.
Sam thinks they're doing the same thing they did with Rick Spielman. I don't know what different things he was hoping for, but okay. Kevin O'Connell comes in. Kwesi comes in at GM. Kirk Cousins coming off of a good season. Still battling that question. Is he a roster elevator or is he just kind of a stat collector along for the ride? Not always doing it at the right time. Still a fair question with Cousins, despite a couple pretty clutch comebacks last year. Justin Jefferson ready to become, I think, maybe the next Devontae Adams, the guy that you might consistently say is top three wide receiver in the NFL. And just dominant in everything he does. Adam Thielen pairing with him. They're probably going to have more three wide receiver sets. It'll be a little bit less reliance maybe on the run game and Dalvin Cook, but you've got some legitimate playmakers there. The offensive line coming together. Still some question marks there as well. And the defense is being overhauled. Kwesi in the draft looked to the secondary early on with Lewis Seen, the safety, after trading down, getting him late first round. Andrew Booth, the cornerback, first round caliber player that they get in the second round. So looks like the Vikings are trying to reshape that secondary in the post Mike Zimmer era. What does this all add up to? Because just like the Bears and the Lions and the Packers being in a rough division, the Vikings have some wins on their schedule, and it looks like they're the same team that is competing for a playoff spot right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think if we assume that the Minnesota Vikings underachieved last year, which seems fair, right? They didn't make the playoffs. Everyone got fired because of it. I think that this kind of puts them back to where they usually are, which is challenging for those playoffs. You know, maybe getting them this year, then in the wild card and blah blah. Like
with an over under of 9, right? I mean, that's 9 wins.
So I think it kind of puts them back where they believe that they're supposed to be, which is good, challenging for the postseason, and then that's it. Like that's where it puts you, which is fine. But you know, do you not have some greater, loftier goals than that?
Yeah, I'm sure you do.
Well, like if you look at the Vikings' record in recent years, right? They've 2014 onwards, 7-9, 11-5, 8-8, 13-3. That was their shot, their window,
the
NFC Championship game, 8-7-1, 10-6, 7-9, 8-9. So this probably puts them back at 10-6.
They're another 7-10 win team.
Yeah, they bounce in that range,
8-10, outside
of the 1 year where they did manage to legitimately put it together and had a championship caliber type of roster, just didn't make it there. But this kind of bounces them back to the higher end of that very predictable range that they've existed in for like the better part of a decade now.
So what do you have to do to take the next step?
I mean, change things.
just do something different. Can Cousins be the guy? Can Cousins be a guy that wins games in the playoffs? This is the eternal question because he's grading better and better. He is accurate. We'd probably like to see him be a little bit more aggressive. Are they going to extract that out of him? Can Kevin O'Connell extract a little bit more aggressiveness and, you know, maybe you turn the ball over a few more times? But you want to be aggressive because you've got Justin Jefferson, right? You've got guys who can make plays.
They are an intriguing team to watch because Kwesi is essentially, you know, people just label him as the analytics GM, right? But his thing of a background in finance, I think, is important as opposed to a background of just like, you know, football nerd.
Yeah.
because he has essentially come out and he's on record saying, look, we don't have Tom Brady or Aaron Rodgers or Patrick Mahomes or whoever the names he mentioned were. Kirk Cousins is good, but he's not those guys. So what he is essentially betting is that his approach of being able to play the percentages across the board in all of these hundreds of different areas that general managers have their fingers in and work in terms of roster management and all this kind of stuff. He's betting that cheating a couple of percentage points in each one of these areas with Kirk Cousins makes up the difference between Kirk Cousins and Aaron Rodgers, or Kirk Cousins and Tom Brady, Kirk Cousins and Patrick Mahomes. Which is going to be really interesting to see if
that's
because
true. That's what he stepped into, right? I mean, that's right now, that's what he stepped into.
Yeah.
And the alternative options to Kirk Cousins were what? What were the alternatives to Kirk Cousins?
I mean, it depends where you want to go.
It depends on how creative you want to get, yeah. I guess.
And how much you want to blow things up and all
that. He said it's not as simple as blowing things up. You don't necessarily want to blow things up.
Right.
Because if they blew things up, that means, oh, you bring in Kenny Pickett. I mean, again, who are you bringing in this year? You have a draft class where the NFL valued one guy as a first rounder, and even that was maybe just one team. No one else went before the third round. Are you saying it should have been Malik Willis or Kenny Pickett? And then it's like you're wasting Justin Jefferson's rookie contract potentially because you're in the middle. I mean, I'm just saying, as a GM, we talk about the quarterback more than any other position on this show, and rightfully so. It's the most important one. But when you're actually with the team, you don't have that many paths, right? You don't have that many options at quarterback to get, which is why, like, the Rams making a move from Jared Goff to Matthew Stafford, it could have blown up in their face, but they made an aggressive move to just get a little bit better with a higher ceiling. But the Rams didn't have a ton of options with Jared Goff. The Eagles didn't have a ton of options with Carson Wentz. They took a second round shot on Jalen Hurts, and he's a capable starter. But the options aren't great for the Vikings other than play the percentages and try to do as much as you can around Kirk while keeping your eye on what those other paths could be for the future.
I like watching teams that do things in a unique way. And the Rams are a good example of that, right? The F them picks idea, whatever you think, their whole strategy, it's been different to everybody else.
Fun to watch.
And that's fun to watch whether or not they won a Super Bowl. The Browns in recent years, they have been getting talked about as a sort of analytics franchise, and then they go and do the whole Deshaun Watson thing. The Eagles do things in a slightly different way. And the Saints, all these teams that do things in a unique way, I think are very fascinating to watch and see how it pans out and whether it works or not. Because there's too many teams just doing the same thing and hoping that it works out and that they're just better at it than everybody else. And it's almost like a randomizer. You're not going to win by just trying to do what everybody else is doing and hope you're the one out of 20 that gets it. It's just a bad approach. You might as well do something different and hope that the different thing is what propels you above 31 other teams. I like that. So the Vikings, I think they deserve some criticism for essentially just staying the course of a plan of action that has proven to not work. But the different thing that they are bringing to the table is the way that Kwesi goes about constructing everything and saying, we are going to mathematically model all this out and we are going to play the better chance of not just this year, but the better chance of long-term sustainable success and work on the basis that at the end of that playing, taking the best bet every time, it's like a gambling way of working it. And the taking the best bet every time might not be glamorous, might not be, it's not going to get you your 500-to-1 out, long shot payoff, but it's what enables you to be a professional gambler and make money doing this. And they are betting essentially that this approach is going to be what enables them to win consistently and have a shot of bringing home a Super Bowl at the end of it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it happen. I mean, it seems like they're really high on Cameron Bynum. He wasn't their draft pick. He was a fourth rounder last year. He only played 129 snaps in coverage, 200 something snaps defensively, had a 78 grade. It looks like he's got a lot of playing time ahead of him. Lewis Cine, who we mentioned that they drafted. So I know there are some similarities to Rick Spielman as far as adding volume in the secondary and stuff like that, but I think he kind of needed to do that because Spielman had missed a bunch in the secondary, and whether it's draft picks or the free agent moves in recent years. So I think they look like another solid team. Yeah, what they've been. It's always this question, I think, coming down to Cousins. If you're going to call Dak, you know, this the engine that needs everything perfect, I mean, Cousins is an extreme version of that, right? Where there's a little bit more of like the touchy-feely stuff. Can he do it in crunch time? Can he do it when you're behind? I mean, he's had a lot of games where maybe he's shown signs of that, but there's something that keeps Kirk Cousins from being a top guy, right? Even if he's grading as a top 10 guy, that can you put the team on his back and carry them? That's always going to be a question. And, you know, this year, do the Vikings have enough to make a playoff run? Maybe, right? It's just another maybe.
They also, so, you know, players staying healthy is a big thing. Like Danielle Hunter, effectively the last time we saw Danielle Hunter really over a season, he was one of the best pass rushers in the league. He had 80-plus pressures. I think that was the year where Za'Darius Smith led the league in pressures, and Danielle Hunter was next. Both those guys are now on the same team. So if they can both stay healthy, the Vikings arguably have, you know, as good a pass-rushing duo as anybody. But both guys are coming off significant injuries, and it's been a while now since we saw the best of Danielle Hunter, even though he's still, like, absurdly young. So, like, that's a pretty important thing. If they get one or both those guys or zero of those guys over the course of the year for most of the season, that is, like, that moves the needle a lot for how good that defense is going to be.
Yeah, there's definitely some question marks on the defensive front.
And then I think
front seven, really.
You know, how those young players that they added to the secondary play is important as well. I really liked the potential of Andrew Booth, but there's some work to be done, particularly a sort of fundamentals and technique thing like that. If he can hit the ground running, that's huge. Same thing with Lewisine. But there are definitely some pieces for the Vikings defense to be a lot better than it was a year ago, which is pretty important because I think you know that the offense will be at least reasonably good. So if the defense can get a lot better from a year ago, that will help.
Zach Davidson getting all sorts of hyped up at tight end.
Yeah. Well, that's because Irv Smith got hurt again.
2021 fifth rounder, Zach Davidson, 6'7". Might be able to make some plays for them. So
another potentially important, you know, injury worry thing is like Irv Smith was supposed to be a breakout candidate last year, got hurt, wasn't supposed to be again this year, just had thumb surgery, I think. So
I mean, that's a question with O'Connell, right? I don't know that he's necessarily going to run the exact system that the Rams run, but they like to roll three wide receivers out there. Previous regime was like, heck no, we're going two wide receivers at all time, you know, more than any other team. We want tight ends and receivers out there, two receiver sets. Mostly they didn't build as much depth in that receiving core the last few years.
You know the way, you know, new head coaches or new, they all sort of poach guys that they worked with in previous destinations?
Like, yeah.
The smartest person that Kevin O'Connell could have stolen was whoever, like, runs the medical operation with the Rams, because those guys have led a charmed existence
for sure
over the last few years, to the point where it's like they've been doing it for so long now that it feels hard to believe that that's just variance, and there might, like, somebody somewhere has to know some stuff that other people don't.
Plus they brought in Johnny Munt. Love speaking that. Of guys that you're familiar with, you know,
Super Bowl baby.
All right, over under 9 for the Vikings. Don't forget, 17-game schedule this year, Sam.
Let's go over. I'll give them a 10 win.
Look at you. Season. Optimistic about the Vikings this year.
They can be 10-7.
First time since 2018 you've been optimistic about the Vikings.
First time since 2018.
Yeah. When they were coming off of 2017.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll go over as well. They're a good team. It's a good football team.
Good
Vikings.
Football team. Good ball team.
I can't wait to see how they build it there. NFC
ball.
North is weak, man. I think it's weak. So Vikings win some games. NFC is weaker. Okay, over 9 for the Vikings. There we go. Look at that. We previewed 8 teams in just over 2 hours. Good work.
Now we got bets.
You want to run through some bets, and we'll accept or decline, and then we'll have, like I said, full show. We've got over 40, I think, we'll run through on a show before the season at some point.
So this will be reasonably rapid fire.
Rapid fire.
One of these feels familiar to the point where we might have read it out before, but you'll just have to live with that if it's true. A guy called Brian Kuhn says Zach Wilson breaks into the top 15 in PFF WAR this season for quarterbacks.
I would accept that. That he's not.
You would accept that bet on the basis that he won't get anywhere near the top 15.
Yes.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a crazy thing. I'm not What do we want to do for bets here? Do we want to be like adamantly against this thing? I'm not adamantly against that.
I'm okay with that one. I think it's on the fence enough that I'm fine with that if we accept it. So
to me, there's a balance between I like the odds that we'd be getting there versus like I'm adamantly against this. I'm against your take.
Okay.
I'm not against this take, but I'd take
it. So, all right, we'll accept it. Done. AJ Terrell will not be top 20 in PFF war among cornerbacks because AJ Terrell is overrated.
I mean, part of calling him overrated is, they're in a zone-heavy scheme that played to his strengths. He still has that. Yeah. He's got Casey Hayward on the other side now.
I mean, I just think we know enough about cornerback play that I it's entirely possible he's not in the top 20 next year.
True. Decline.
Same. Steelers will have a top 8 secondary by the end of the season, according to PFF's rankings.
I would not accept that.
Same.
I was looking at the war numbers. If they play to their 3-year sample, they could easily be top 8.
Yeah, and again, coverage play all over the place.
Don't give us coverage bets.
Could easily happen. Davis Mills will have a higher PFF grade than Trevor Lawrence. Sorry, hang on. I need to names. Luke Brehm was the guy with the AJ Terrell thing. Adam Gesk was the Steelers one. This one is from Matthew Story.
I would accept. I would take Trevor Lawrence over Davis Mills.
See, I don't want to accept that because I'm entirely on the fence with Davis Mills. There's almost no outcome that would surprise me with him this year.
I think we should stick our neck out here.
No.
Davis Mills versus Trevor
No, because it wouldn't shock me if Davis Mills had a better grade than Trevor Lawrence this year.
New evidence, Davis Mills did make a joke about the neck picture, saying his mom said he should be getting some
turtleneck
sponsorships. I'm just saying that makes Davis Mills
more likable.
Yeah. Way more likable.
He's heading towards the Josh Allen route.
Yeah, like those year two quarterbacks, they start to open up a little bit, make jokes. I still would take Trevor Lawrence over Davis.
We can't take that bet.
All right.
We can't.
We both have to agree, so we decline. We decline that bet.
This one from Tyler Landis. The Bills will finish under 11.5 wins in the regular season, and Josh Allen will finish outside the top 5 in PFF grade.
I mean, the Josh Allen thing absolutely is plausible.
I think they're both plausible. I mean, they'd be unlikely and they'd be surprising, but not to the point where I'm willing to bet on it.
No, I'm not adamant enough against this, as a Josh Allen Bills fan.
Of course. This one from Iggy Benjamin. Good name.
Iggy.
The Colts will have 3 players with top 3 PFF grades at their positions in 2022. He thinks it'll be Quentin Nelson, JT? Who's JT?
Jonathan Taylor.
Yes, and Thomas. One more. Darius Leonard, friend of the show.
Shaquille Leonard. I mean, we're not going to bet against that because those are all guys that we like and have graded
that
one.
Could easily happen.
Yeah.
No, forget it. Now, last one, Thomas Stewart. The Seahawks will win 8 or more games in 2022.
You love this.
Hell yes. We are accepting this. There's not a hope in the hell they're winning 8 or more games. Agreed?
There's no way.
No way.
All right, yeah, I'll accept this.
Certainly not with the current quarterbacks on the roster.
Has anybody put anything up? I'm more willing to accept bets if there's...
Oh, there's a lot of stakes to all of these.
The benefit to this, Sam...
Not all of these, but a lot of these.
We can give away something of value, edge, elite. That doesn't really... But we're not really giving anything up ourselves.
Don't forget, we've also got books to give away.
We got books to give away, so we'll give stuff up. But I'm ready. I want coffee. I want some, send me a steak or something if you lose.
No, people have been suggesting steaks and stuff. Steak, STAKES. I'm just saying, I've cautioned before.
No, I want steaks. STEAK.
I understand that. I'm just saying that people have been suggesting.
They're putting stuff up.
What's another word for steaks?
Steaks is right.
The word steaks.
People
terms. People have been suggesting monetary terms, quid pro quo here. I'm just cautioning you to be careful because if we lose, 25 bets that all have steaks attached to them, we're out of pocket by quite a lot.
Yeah, but if we're giving away. Subscriptions.
There's only so many subscriptions and books we can do to offset. Some of these have money attached to them. Okay. Like the dude that wanted to go to the Super Bowl or whatever and wear an advertising hoarding.
Yeah,
that's a lot of money.
Yeah, true. I understand.
So I'm just saying, tap the brakes over there, Sparky.
I think the only thing we give up is books and and subscriptions is what I'm saying. And then in return, steaks.
So anyway, there's 2 new ones that we've officially accepted. The Seahawks winning 8 or more games and Zach Wilson breaking into the top 15 in PFF war this season. For quarterbacks, he says.
All right.
It's not overall, but same. Quarterbacks are all at the top.
Yeah. Well, that sounds good.
So there you go. There's some bets.
So we'll do a whole show.
So NFL podcast at PFF.com if you want to bet things. We'll have potentially more next show, and we'll have a whole show at some point, maybe running through the ball.
Sounds good. I'm excited. I like this. Did we give the guy that came up with this idea, did we give him a subscription yet?
I don't remember.
If you came up with the idea of betting, we'll find it. But that guy has earned a subscription.
Yeah.
Probably elite, because we've turned this into a whole thing. It's become popular. So anyway, appreciate everybody for tuning in. We're halfway through the league. Previewing them only took about 5 hours. Sweet. Halfway through the league. Next week, we will run through the South and the West of all the divisions. We also have a very special interview that might show up on the show next week, or maybe we record it for the next week. We'll see. We'll see how we drop that. But thanks to everybody for tuning in. We'll see you again on Monday, previewing some more NFL action. We also might have something very special on our TikTok coming up soon. Right? Perhaps the tortilla challenge. Perhaps the challenge has been accepted.
Your face still red.
Still a little ringing in my ear, but see who wins on TikTok. Tortilla challenge. Drum.
How'd you do it, tortilla?
Things happen today. We'll reveal that maybe on Monday. All right. Thanks to everybody for tuning in. See you Monday.